missed you so much.
This is a good day.
Dear Asami, where'd you come from, little cutie?
Dear Cora, I'll destroy you.
Your fiancé?
What do you mean?
This can't be happening.
Well done. She seems very threatening.
Look how cute! Does this mean I'm the master now?
Actually, we're doing fine.
How?
And then she dies.
Think someone is pulling your chain, Gumdrop.
Are you kidding me?
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
We're talking minimum 4 hours.
We'll always have Kale.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongbuFang.net. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Britt.
Hi.
Delaney.
YOLO.
And Mare.
Hello.
Today we'll be discussing The Battle of Zhaofu, episode 6 of Book 4 of The Legend of Korra. It does have the in the name, unlike, Nick.com did not notice that, though, apparently.
You know, Nick.com is hardly run by geniuses, okay? I'm pretty sure this is a bunch of interns that are like, I don't know how to work internet, you do it.
You'd think they could get the episode title right, though. It's right in the beginning, I don't know. Anyway, this is
that
the...
That would be far too easy, though.
I'd say this is the most predictable episode title ever, and also not descriptive of what happened, so that's good. Yeah, a lot to discuss in this episode. Where we're going next, we'll just pretty epic episode. If this is your first time listening to a podcast, there's information at the end, but for now we're going to get right into it. I guess at first there's a note that The Rift Part 3 is out in comic book stores, probably in retail next week. A lot of people have been asking about when we're going to podcast on The Rift, this isn't the priority right now. Book 4 is. I will say I've been starting to read through all three parts of The Rift, and it is pretty good. So
it's good. Do it. Yes,
so
I finished it.
Hopefully I'll have a review up of all three parts on DF soon, but not going to be a podcast on it probably until the end of December. So we'll get to that eventually. But more importantly, The Battle of Zhaofu, like I said, episode 6, written by Tim Hedrick, directed by Melkar Zwire, storyboarded by Owen Solchoy, Elsa and Sean O'Neill, or Sean, whatever. I'm forgetting the storyboarders' last names, but that's okay. And
they probably are very offended, Dylan.
I mean, I'm trying to specifically mention them in the beginning of each podcast, because having interacted with them on Tumblr, I am realizing more and more how important they are, and I don't think I recognized that before. So,
yes.
Anyway, let's get into it. Initial thoughts on The Battle of Zhaofu. Give me quickly, did you like it or not like it? And give me one or two things that you particularly enjoyed. Let's start with Britt.
I really enjoyed this episode. I liked it a lot more than I thought it was going to. I thought it was going to be kind of average, but I don't know. I think this might be personally one of my favorites. And my favorite scenes were the ones with Varric and Bolin. I just thought those were the best and they were hilarious and everything with the bomb, and then I quite liked Jenora.
The bomb. I get it.
The bomb.
The bomb was the bomb.
Yeah, okay. Yes, quite like Jenora. Yes, I agree. Okay, Delaney, what do you think?
I really enjoyed this episode. Favorite parts? Kuvira, she's great, beautiful. I adore her. And all of the Batar hate. There is in-universe Batar hate. We have lines about Batar being terrible, and I love it because I hate Batar. So
that is rude, but I think many people agree. Maybe I'll defend Batar because everyone hates him. We'll see.
Well, I can defend Batar as well, but he just irritates me in general.
I mean, I can also understand Batar. Batar is still stupid.
Yes, Batar is very dumb.
He doesn't seem that intelligent in this episode. Okay.
No.
Mare, what do you think?
I absolutely love this episode, and I absolutely hated Kuvira, but it's hate that's in a good way. I absolutely hate her, but I think that's good. And I absolutely loved Opal and Jenora and all of that, and yeah, and all of the stuff with Varric and Bolin. So I pretty much loved everything about this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
I agree.
A few things, but
there's a few things. Yeah. Well. Yeah. I think this was much more of a consistent episode than the previous three.
Yeah, the pacing was so much better than last week. I wasn't constantly looking to see how many minutes were left.
That's interesting. I didn't really have that last week, but it was more well put together, I guess. So there's a lot of jumping during the battle scene with Korra and Kuvira. It's another scene. I don't know if that's good or bad, but yeah, I quite enjoyed this one. It's not the elite quality episode I was looking for, but it was, I think, better than the last three.
I think it was the best one since Korra alone.
Yeah, I think it is the best since Korra alone, but I don't think it's in the same tier as Korra alone.
Episode.
Right, Well, I don't know if it's mid. Like, I've thought all of the previous three have been very good, and I think
like
this
mid-range
one's,
between the other two. Like, it's not as good as Coraline.
I think it's definitely in the middle as the previous three is Coraline, but I think it's way more towards the previous three. I think the A plot is underwhelming considering the contents of it. Like, to me, I should love this A plot, and I do, but it's a little boring at times. Like, it's very stereotypical and a little boring. But that being said, I still loved it anyway. Like, it features my favorite characters, so I'm gonna like the A plot. And I think the B plot was better, but it was still a little predictable, except the very end, which we have to talk about, because it might not make any sense. So we kind of have to discuss whether Varric is a logical person or not. The thing I enjoyed most was the ending of the episode. I thought it was ended very well. I thought it set up really well for the second half of the season, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next. So let's get into specifics. Thank you to Mel for outlining the episode, except when Star noted otherwise, I added a little bit. Let's start at Act 1. We have the clip from last week. If you are not aware, Nick puts out clips at midnight on technically Saturday, actually Friday night. We'll presumably get another one this week, which will give us the title and the first scene of the episode. Sue and Wei and Wang are sneak... Wang, right?
It's Wang and
Wang and Wei.
Wang and Wei? What? Ah, okay, they're sneaking
Wing
into...
Wang and Wei.
I couldn't tell them apart. Nick had this dumb quiz on the website, and he was like, which one of the two twins is this? And I'm like, how are you supposed to know? Okay, anyway, they're sneaking into...
It wasn't that great name for kids, okay? Like, it's really, really uncreative.
They're sneaking
like, in... Batar Jr., okay, you've named it after the child's father. Like, okay, good job.
I wonder if they're thinking ahead, because that seems to be... They're definitely playing that up now. At the end of the episode, I wonder if they thought ahead that far. Anyway, yeah. They're sneaking into the camp. Sue and the twins. Sue says they'll have the Kuvira supporters will have no reason to fight if they take Kuvira out, which is something I brought up previously on the podcast, which I thought was true, which other people disagreed with. It's interesting. We don't know enough of Sue's of Kuvira's military structure to like really know whether that's true, but. Presumably, it's just Kuvira.
It could be, but I don't know. Like, I still think they should have just, like, held up for, like, siege warfare and then waited for somebody to come in, because I don't really think Kuvira is that equipped for siege warfare.
So, I think...
So far, her army has pretty much just been, like, marching into things.
I think that, in this situation, I think it becomes pretty obvious later in the episode that Zhao Fu has no opposition force ready.
No.
Sure, you could, like, try to lock them out and, and maybe they wouldn't be prepared for it, but Kuvira can just literally open the domes by metal-bending them open. So it doesn't seem like a good idea. So it seems like what they have to do is either Korin's Avatar State or Sue sneaks in and kills Kuvira. Yeah, like, these are the only options.
And especially given, like, later in the episode what happens... they are presenting Kuvira very heavily as a cult. This is a cult personality. That's what they are presenting it as. Which doesn't necessarily line up with the structure that we've been kind of seeing for her military, but it makes sense for what they're presenting, that they're kind of pushing the cult of personality.
It's hard to tell what her followers are thinking, but it's easy to tell how she's projecting herself to her followers.
Yes.
Which becomes relevant when she decides to fight Korra on her own.
Yeah,
right?
that's what I was referring to. Like, that's,
I agree
that's
with you.
A cult personality thing.
Seems...
the leader of a cult, or like
no, okay, the cult of personality.
No, we don't. I don't like
the
buzz. No, no phrase needed to explain. The important thing is that like she's they're following her. Like she's like trying to build herself up and
it's all about
be this.
Her.
Yeah, be this singular leader.
It's not about an idea. It's like Napoleon. Like they were about. They only cared about Napoleon. They didn't care what Napoleon stood for. It was just all about him. So
yeah,
it's all about.
I get you.
Like I don't think
theology we call that a charismatic leader.
Like I don't think it's clear that her supporters think of her that way because we haven't seen their perspective.
Yeah.
But it does seem like she's trying to portray herself that way at the very least. Her second in command.
A little bit of their perspective. They did like help her when she fell down.
Yeah, and they cheered at the end and stuff like that. Her second in command, Batar Jr., does not seem particularly well equipped to take over, given that. At the end of the episode, it seems like Zhu Li is the new third in command. So that's pretty. There seems like there's just no one else in the. In the power structure, even Robbie and Steve are not that important, apparently, who are these random...
I think they're the ones who caught her.
Ooh, which one though? That's the ship, depending on. Anyway, Robbie and Steve, we named the two.
Clearly, she
the two military officials Kuvira is talking with last episode. Anyway, they don't seem to be that important, which is interesting. Anyway, Sue uses seismic sense to find Kuvira in the tent, and Null says they badger mole it in. I think that's pretty descriptive.
I really liked that part. That was cute. They looked like ninjas. They was really smart.
And this is
the first time we've seen Sue use seismic sense, correct?
Yeah. I believe so.
We've seen the other lady use it. We
did Lynn use it? Yeah, someone used it.
Lynn's used it a few times.
Yeah, so interesting. Obviously, her seismic sense not that good because it can't identify Kuvira from someone else, right?
Yeah.
Toph's
in the swamp, like screaming.
Yeah, she's sitting there watching this. Yeah. As this is where the clip cut off, but as predicted by several people, including Jeff, it turned out Julie was being, not specifically Julie is the stand-in, but people thought it would be a stand-in for Kuvira, and it was Julie, and Kuvira knew they were coming, and she calls Sue a coward for hiding from a fair fight. You've always been a coward, she says.
Which is funny because Kuvira didn't face her. She let there be a body double so she could humiliate her instead of just being like, I'm going to destroy you. What? Okay, Kuvira.
So I actually think Kuvira is pretty good in this episode at standing on the moral high ground. I think this is legitimate.
I think this
is legitimate. I think what she says when she's fighting Korra is legitimate.
Definitely. Everything with Korra is like,
I don't know.
Kuvira believes what she's saying.
I was joking.
I'm not so sure Kuvira believes what she's saying.
Well, to an extent, I think she believes what she's saying, or she wants to believe what
she's
saying.
Yeah, so it's like this Kuvira figure, it doesn't matter to her whether she believes what she's saying. It's just important that other people think that. Yeah, that's what she's mostly concerned about here. And then we're back inside Zafu with Korra, Opal, and Jinora. I should just say I'm just completely thrilled with that all the three of them are together here. Like, these are three of my five favorite characters, and three of the five characters I care about in the show. I don't think I'm that too invested in really anyone else besides these three, Iki and Asami. And they're wonderful, and I'm slightly disappointed they don't get to do more non-stereotypical things, but just seeing them together is enough. It's wonderful. Opal wants to help Korra to help Sue, and Korra says no.
I loved Opal this episode. Like, I disagreed with her on everything she did, but I loved her. I liked watching her.
I really liked her in this episode.
I don't know whether
on the Beifong family is killing me.
I don't know.
She's definitely coming to her own.
Last season, we're like, oh, all of Sue's many kids. Who has time to count them? But here, it's very relevant. Like, which ones are left? You know, it's just Opal and Skrillex are left in.
We need to talk about his hair.
Yeah, we have mentioned it before, but
I hope he does something.
It's green, and if you weren't aware, Skrillex is Juan, which they say his name in the episode, but yeah, he's always Skrillex, even if he doesn't have the haircut anymore. Kuvira on the loudspeaker. I think this is very reminiscent of Zaheer in Long Live the Queen last season. Mel transcribed it, so let's read the quote. Your leader, Su Beifang, attempted to attack me while I slept, ignoring the terms of our truce. Luckily, I now have her and her assault team in custody. Rest assured I will not take revenge on the peaceful citizens of Zafu as long as your remaining representatives meet me outside the city at dawn to offer the full and unconditional surrender of your city. That is all. So, again, taking the moral high ground here, or the ethical high ground. And
assault team JK her kids.
Just JK her kids, yeah. But it's interesting. I think one thing that's interesting is that the remaining representatives are just people, are just Opal and other just people that don't live in the city anymore, right?
Do they have a city? It doesn't seem like they do.
I think it's been presented as it's Sue, like Sue's the leader, and then like they don't have Sue, and then like what's and Batar's not really.
It
doing
seems
anything.
Like Batar Senior should have went outside. Maybe,
yeah, that's what I would think.
I don't know. Maybe that acupuncturist. Like we've seen him before. Why not him?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It seems like these are not the leaders of the city.
It's interesting that like.
Are they like an anarchal society or something? I'm really confused.
It's just more of a everyone just defers to Sue. It seems like I think it's implied that Sue doesn't have an official government structure set up.
Yeah.
But she's in charge.
Kind of live together. Yeah, but she's in charge. Yeah.
Yeah. Opal wants to fight. Jinora says that she swore an oath of non-aggression when she became an airbender. Korra says, Sue broke the truce and Kuvira has a point. The airbender non-aggression thing is interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I guess it kind of relates back to the old world airbenders who were all about peace and they didn't even have a form of military, so maybe.
Yeah, and this is...
To help the world, you can't be an aggressive force, you know, they're peacekeepers.
Yeah.
It's interesting because this relates to what's going on in the Rift a lot.
I'm happy that didn't continue throughout the whole episode. Like, I don't want the plot line of, like, Jenora and everybody refusing to fight. I mean, I'm glad that they stepped in the end, but...
Yeah, they didn't really fight, but they did.
I thought it was going to get airy.
So even when they do that, it's not offensive fighting, like offensive.
Oh, yeah, the difference is they were provoked. Korra fell. Yeah.
Not only were they provoked, they're just not hurting anyone with their tornado. Yeah. Like they're just just putting up a wall.
There's a difference between that and what Opal was suggesting. Yeah.
So I think it is. It makes sense that Opal would not be completely okay with the non-aggression thing because she's just incredibly angry and feisty the entire season.
Her family is in trouble, and I would go do something awful. Dylan's gonna have to cut that part, but
she tried to stop herself. But yeah, I don't know. It's understandable her perspective, but at the same time, I'm gonna agree.
It's not the right.
It's not the appropriate
response, but it is. And understandable.
At the same time, I'm going to agree with Jenora because I agree with everything Jenora says.
It's interesting because Korra got a lot of flack for this back in book two. Like, I mean, when her dad was in court or whatever, a lot of people were getting mad at her character being so jumpy. But
I expected,
what Opal's doing.
That's a really good point, actually. I expected a similar reaction to Opal to Korra in the beginning of book two. People just really didn't like Korra.
I'm seeing a lot of people not liking Korra in this episode, which is irritating. But...
It's like now people don't like Korra because she's not being aggressive enough.
People just don't like Korra.
I think it's like a different people who want different things from Korra, and they're just kind of going back and forth.
And there's people can never be happy.
So, like, I think
I felt like Korra was very understandable. She was like playing the calm, collected one, and as the Avatar, I think to an extent you have to be calm and collected and make good decisions.
The thing
and be
with
patient and.
Yeah, well, like, we'll get into Korra's motivations.
We'll get into that, I guess.
Yeah,
but
the thing with Opal right now is I think they've been very good at making Opal's anger and frustration understandable based on the plot. However, Opal has not been anything but angry and frustrated this season when we've seen her. So I would understand why people who like don't love her like me would be just like not thrilled with the way she's acted because we just haven't seen any other side of her, you know. But she's incredible, so I love her still. So
I really like her.
Yeah, she's
great. And just the Beifong family focus is like hurting my soul, and I love it. Like, yes.
What are they gonna do when they find out that Bolin and Varric died?
I don't know that it's gonna get that far.
We know they're not dead, but they're gonna think that they're dead.
So
because we see them with like a mecha tank in the trailer, so it's obvious like that somebody's after them and knows that they're alive.
So at some point, someone's gonna know. Also, only Kuvira thinks that they're dead, so like not necessarily gonna get back to people outside of her army. And that's things to talk about later. The Air Kids come out two of them. Iki and Mila come out in PJs, and they're adorable.
The cutest pajamas.
Iki looks like she looked 3 years ago, which is, I think, probably pretty accurate. Like, still looks like a little kid in PJs. She's adorable.
And then Milo, I just wanted to pick him up and cuddle him.
But then he opens his mouth and is smelling.
Yes, but then Milo talks, but he looks so cute.
I thought his line was kind of cute, though. Why is the loudspeaker lady talking while I'm trying to sleep?
Yeah.
He's annoying, but he's still cute.
Yeah, I still don't like him.
He's a typical. I'm sorry, like, boys his age are irritating. Like, it's the age. Like, it's
it doesn't mean.
It's a thing.
That way, Dylan.
I don't know if I was like me. I doubt it. But yeah, he's.
It's a thing. It's annoying.
He's still our thing. Why are we not? Iki took a backseat to Milo here, and it was annoying. Yeah. And then we. Skrillex's bedhead, says Mel.
That's quite
so
nice.
Great.
Mm-hmm. And
his pajamas are also pretty great.
I didn't really notice his pajamas. I don't know. But it's okay.
He's more neon green. I'm like, continue, yes.
He's not that important. Jenora says Iki and Milo should stay behind with Batar and Skrillex, and they're like, no,
that
but she's
was
like, yes.
Said really weird.
What line?
What was it? Dad, what? She
the one,
said...
The one where they zoom up on her face.
And like, you need to be safe. Like, the line was delivered so strangely.
Yeah. I don't know if
I don't
it was
know
just,
what was going
was
on.
Was it just strange delivery? Are we supposed to read into that? I don't
know. No. It's just, Kieran and Shipka doesn't say things super linearly all the time. It's notable with Jenora. I think it makes for a realistic character portrayal, honestly.
Like she's holding something in.
I don't know if that's what we're supposed to take away, honestly. I'm not sure.
I don't know what we're supposed
not sure.
to think if I'm we're just supposed to think anything.
I just thought it was weird.
Janora's lines didn't have a lot of anything behind them, really. Yeah. Like, just for, and Opal's.
A lot of the dialogue in the spotlight didn't have a much.
And a lot of the dialogue in Apa was very factual and blunt, which is, I will point out when we get to that point lines.
Okay.
Varric is in prison. He's having nightmares about Julie. Cookie jar empty, no hot towels, waxy buildup. Julie. She really is gone.
He so loves her, and it's adorable.
Yeah, he is.
Like, he just doesn't know it yet either.
Well, it seems like he's realizing it this episode.
You have no idea. Yeah. I want him to beg for forgiveness on his knees. Ugh.
It seems like that's where we're going.
When he says he's been caring about others lately. His conscience.
Yeah, exactly. Batar Jr. retrieves Varric to go to the new lab. He does not have tea like Julie, notes Varric. Varric says, I'm usually only productive 15 minutes a day, usually only around 3:45.
Same. Me and Varric are the same person.
Same, yeah. Varric wants Bolin as an assistant, and they do this whole no hands thing, and yeah, Bolin's coming.
So. I think that was pretty smart of Varric to like come up with that ruse.
But yeah, Varric is... It's very alternates between nonsensical and very tactical here.
Yes.
Batar Jr. is just so easily manipulable.
Nonsensicalness as like a way to be tactical.
Definitely. He wants to come across as absurd so that they'll just believe that he's not trying to manipulate him. But also, Batar Jr. is just dumb. So that's
okay. Well. I would like to point out. I think this is interesting on Batar Jr.'s part that he has the guards touch Varric and do everything. Meanwhile, Kuvira is, like, choking people out and just, like what? What
very
are
passive.
You two together?
Like me. Batar is like me when I don't want to open the door. I don't like to open doors, so I, like, walk behind other people and make them open the door for me.
That's all Batar does, though, is
open
doors.
That's basically what
Batar
does.
Open doors.
But Batar is not a small white girl, so it just looks pathetic.
That's true.
I mean, are you sure he's not a small white girl?
I mean, there are some differences. I mean...
There's a lot of differences there. Okay, where are we?
He needs to...
Cora, Janora, and Opal meet with Kuvira at dawn, says Mel. I don't know if it's dawn, but Opal tells Kuvira to release her now. Kuvira says only if Sue bends the knee to Kuvira. And now we get first terrible line of the episode. Sue says, never! I'll never bow to you. Okay, so...
The delivery, though.
Okay.
The delivery was quite good, even if the line itself was kind of...
Never! I'll never bow to you!
The delivery was great.
Cora is trying to be diplomatic. Opal asks where Bolin is. Kuvira tells her he's with Batar Jr. working on something important and that he's on board with her plan. You two have been apart for some time. I guess you don't realize how much Bolin has grown up. So... Yeah, so this is, like, the... This is
shade.
The...
Like, that's personal.
This is the only, like... obviously questionable thing that Kuvira does. Here's my question with this line. Is this a realistic thing that Kuvira might say given the situation, or is this just shoehorned in to advance the plot with Opal and Bolin?
I think it's realistic.
She was part of their family, so she doesn't, like, know them personally. If she was just, like,
why would Kuvira feel the need to say this to Opal?
Because I think Kuvira is jealous of Opal and, like, how she is Sue's actual daughter and was raised...
It
and becoming
sense.
Airbender and has all these things.
It makes
her.
Sense. It goes back to the first episode from
like Opal is everything that Kuvira is not.
I mean, we definitely have the knowledge that Kuvira is aware of their relationship and stuff. I mean, she ships them, so like she's just in denial that they're not together. So she's.
Well, I think
it is just another blow to take, but it makes sense.
I think I think it's
another way to undermine people. She likes to undermine other women. You know what I mean?
I don't know whether she's jealous of Opal. I don't know whether she's trying to undermine her. I don't know if that's any of that's true. But
trying to manipulate her emotionally, make her feel bad.
Understood. That's what they're trying to get. My thing that I take issue is the juxtaposition of this with never. I'll never bow to you. It just seems much less important, and I feel like it's a little unrealistic. But it's fine. Ultimately, it's fine. But it is a little unrealistic.
Well, and also, like she knows Bolin. She knows Bolin doesn't like Bolin tried to leave. Like she's trying to reaffirm to herself, and she's trying to keep them apart because Bolin's obviously trying.
Yes. Yes,
so I agree. Like Delaney's explanation better than
I mean. That's like this is the surface level explanation, right? Like, yeah. So here's something that should be noted and is probably the best part of the episode. We have a giant A plot in this episode on a battlefield, and it is hugely important to the entire plot of the show. And five characters speak in this A plot on the battlefield. They're all female. Ding.
Woo.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes.
Yay.
Praise.
And we have epic female fight. It's great.
How this is just such a stark contrast for between books one and two and now. Like, there's like no females talking except Korra in books one and two, and now we have the entire plot is focused around Jinora, Korra, Opal, Sue, and Kuvira, and it's wonderful.
Yes.
This is why I would want the plot to be better, the A plot, like, to not be written less stale and stuff, because, like, it should be wonderful, because it's focusing on good characters and stuff, but it still is good. We have some moments, certainly.
Yeah.
Avatar Korra, you are interfering with internal Earth Empire business and letting your personal feelings get in the way of reason. So this is like a very common line when you're trying to assert your logical superiority in an argument. I've personally done this with members of the podcast arguing with them. I feel you, Kavira. This is a kind of a bad thing to say.
Dylan feels you.
I feel you, and I also I also understand that she's being kind of a bad person here, and I relate to it because I've said this exact line before. Like,
yep.
Yeah, sometimes it's true, but it's a bad thing to say to someone. But at the same time, sometimes it is true, and I think she's kind of right here. You know, to Korra. You know, like.
Well, yeah, well,
she's right.
Korra's been gone for like 3 years. She shows up. Kuvira's like, "Listen, I'm almost done doing your job. What are you doing now?" Like, Kuvira, that's what makes Kuvira so interesting. Like, she's not wrong.
She's not wrong. It's interesting.
She's not wrong, but she's not right.
Like,
she's doing something that you could consider justified, but it's still, you're like, this is not
the way to go about it.
What, I don't like this. This makes me, what do we do? Why? Like, that's so, your entire reaction. You're just like, I don't understand.
So getting
like she, there's conflicting things about her.
So you getting beyond that a little
she's
bit,
not
like
consistent.
her logic is very solid, but that being said, her logic is based on a faulty foundation. That's what's getting this type of reaction. Everything she says makes sense and is fine, but it's based on the fact that she has inherent authority and the Earth Empire is a thing and not the Earth Kingdom anymore. So you have to accept that in order to get to where she's saying. And her argument is why maybe you don't understand that that's the way it is now, Korra, but that is the way it is. And Korra really
it's
can't refute that. She's been away.
Korra's
been away, so it's really hard for her to refute that anyway. Kuvira wants Zhaofu's technology and resources spread throughout the Earth Empire. This is about equality, she says.
Amon said that too.
Was Amon Kuvira the entire time?
You know, it'd make more sense.
It would make more sense than what happened. That's true. Okay, the only
it's like that episode of Jimmy Neutron where she like unzips herself through the back and like pulls off this thin suit, and she's secretly Amon.
Yes, that's what's gonna happen now. Jimble,
yes.
Jimble's what's the Facebook account, whatever that is. Yeah, I keep seeing that on Tumblr. Anyway, the only way you're going to keep me out of Zhaofu is if you physically stop me. Now, what are you going to do?
That's the only line I cannot stand.
Relevant anymore.
Nope.
What's not relevant? Yeah. Oh,
that's the best line.
So you're not even relevant anymore. Yeah.
Like,
so
she literally said, "You're not even relevant." Like,
no,
oh,
it doesn't. No, that's later. That's later.
No, is it?
It's
no,
later.
It's the same
later
speech.
Anyway, it's the same speech. But yeah, so Mel says way to be on the nose. So then Korra says she will do so, and Kuvira says she will fight the Avatar one-on-one. She appeals to her supporters. We kind of talked about this, that this is her maintaining her image. So I'm actually don't dislike that line from Kuvira. The only way you're going to keep me out of Zhaofu is if you physically stop me. Kuvira's dialogue.
She's very blunt. So
that
makes
line,
sense within context of her. It's still. It would be it's something stupid to say. Kuvira would say something
that part
blunt
of that line
on the nose.
Bad.
You know what I mean?
What's the bad part? Now, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I didn't like that. That's just like
that's a little bit plot moving. Yeah,
yeah.
So to me, Kuvira should, in a general sense, Kuvira should have blunt dialogue. Her lines are intentionally manufactured by herself to maintain her image. It makes sense to me that her dialogue would be very matter of fact. And I'm completely fine with almost all of her dialogue. I don't really think there's like three really bad lines in this episode, and I don't think this is one of them.
It was just painful, the physically part. It was just like, oh, but then like it makes sense. It's Kuvira. Like, it's in her, like, it's as opposed to certain characters, like
Sue. Like, well, Sue, like, yeah. Sue has no reason to be talking the way she is, yes. basically. Other than the fact that
it's
she
like
doesn't
Tenzin.
Have time.
Like, of course Tenzin says these dumb things.
Tenzin also really Tenzin. Doesn't have any way other than the fact that he's just dumb. Yeah. It's Korra, yeah. So then, Korra, if you win, you can do whatever you want with Zhao Fu, but when I beat you, I want you out of my business for good. I'm the one who brought peace to the Earth Empire, not you. You're not relevant here anymore.
You're not even relevant. Like,
this sounds like something my sister would say after I didn't coming. Clean the house, and she cleaned the whole house, and she didn't want me to have any ice cream.
Wow.
So I That's, think Kuvira needs what, to
what,
down.
What, oh, what a great analog.
Like, does that make sense? Like, she's acting sort of like childish, like, this is mine. I did this. You don't get any credit.
But if we're going to be fair, she, like, Korra was gone for 3 years. Kuvira pulled the entire
Korra was
Earth
kind of,
empire.
Like, recovering
well, no one knows.
Paralysis. Like,
well, see, but no, like, you know, the world knew she was healing, but no one knows the extent, even Jinora, no one knows the full extent of, like, what happened to Korra. But my thing is, Kuvira
she
is,
still there.
She has a point.
She does
pulled
have
the
a
entire
point.
Nation up by its bootstraps. She's created this great, I mean, she's doing great things, in theory. We haven't seen the actual bad camps. But, like, she's, I mean, she has every right to say that to Korra. I think.
You think
not
so?
The relevant part. The relevant line's hilarious.
So, I mean, I think
you're not even relevant anymore. It's hilarious.
The most so, yeah. All of what Delaney said, but the important line is the you're not even relevant part. That's like a thesis statement to the way Korra feels right now.
Yes.
The show has been very much stating what's going on with Korra mentally, like, bluntly, and this is Kuvira saying it. It's better here because it's, like, thrown as an insult, and it's, like, makes sense within the dialogue as opposed to Toph giving us a thesis statement for the entire show.
And the images, and the...
Yeah, and then the images pop up, which, like, that was this is better.
This is
good.
This is much better.
Yeah. Mel says this is very Game of Thrones-y, by the way.
Yes, Mel said it was very Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones-y.
Yes.
Sure, yeah, a lot of stuff.
It's very show Game of Thrones, I'll give you that. It's not very...
It does seem show Game of Thrones, and I have not read the books, but... anything else that we get a sigh from Britt for that? I knew it. Okay. Act 2. Opal questions Korra. It's been a while, but I got a lot of pent-up rage. Who says that? Korra?
Korra. Obviously. Who else would say that? Of course Korra said that.
Korra once again refuses to... urges to enter the Avatar state immediately. So Opal's like, just go in the Avatar state and end this, like Sue said last episode. And Korra's like, no, that's a last resort.
Such character development, like that goes back, in my opinion, that goes back to like the very first episode in book 2 when Tenzin's telling her like the Avatar state is not like a booster rocket, she can't just use it whenever she feels like it needs to be used. And
good job remembering dialogue from 201. Yeah, that's true, that is good, that is a good parallel. I've kind of blocked out 201 to 205, so
201
is fine. It's 202 to 205. 202 to
205
are the problems. 201's fine. But yeah, no. Okay, let's talk about this. So Mel says, why? Why is Korra once again refusing to enter the Avatar Sea immediately? So
she's afraid.
So
we saw why. Like, look what happened. There was a giant rock. Okay. She was ready to go. And
okay, there's a giant rock. Oh, let's not bring in rocks and like giant rocks in Avatar State. No, thank you. back to, okay, point counterpoint. Which I'll give both the point and the counterpoint. The point is Korra is afraid to enter the Avatar State. Or really enter in like to heavy combat. This brings upon fears of her getting hurt again, like she did at the end of book 3, at the end of book 2, at the end of book 1, and she just doesn't want to do this. She hasn't gotten over her fears or anxieties yet. Counterpoint, this is what we said last podcast, by the way, and I thought it was a good point, but I think we're missing the ostensible reason. As Toongal pointed out on the Dong Lufeng forums, Korra, another reason for Korra acting the way she is now non-aggressively is just because she's learning from Toph, like, literally what Toph said. Toph says, like, learn from your enemies and stuff like that, and she's like, I can't just be doing this, and I'm just summarizing what she said. But yeah, it's, don't act the way you have in the past, you need to adapt to things and stuff like that, so she's just taking this to heart. To me, in this episode, it's more apparent that she's, like, afraid, I guess. I don't know if it's a philosophy change or a mental block, right? Like, so that's the thing.
Yeah.
I think it's both, but I think both
fight.
Of them.
Can I bring something up about
sure.
Korra's fighting style versus Kuvira's that I noticed that kind of was interesting? Cora doesn't really have much strategy when she fights someone one-on-one. She just kind of waylays at them, like, just throws a bunch of, like, she tries to defeat them with brute force, and then Kuvira is very reactionary and redirects the force and is very thoughtful in what she does and how she places moves and what she's doing.
Like, Kuvira counters. That's what,
like, Cora, majority of the she counters, but she also, you know, she uses the counters effectively.
Yeah.
And I was just, like, watching Cora go after her again and again and again and wasting all this energy and just not being productive and waiting for her to realize this isn't working. Let's do this smarter. And it just didn't happen. And I'm wondering if she'll get there at some point.
I think that's a good point. I think that's been Cora's fighting style for a while. Just
it's not as bad as it was in season one where she just went, like, all out every single blow, but now
the use of the firebending is very obvious that, like,
she started with that, like, it's sort of like a reversion, like her rebirth, but she's doing what she did before, but now she needs to think when she punches somebody.
Think when you're punching. Yeah,
use your punch. Use your punch effectively. Use your brain.
It's a good point.
The strongest muscle in your body.
It's a good point that Kuvira is very evasive. Yeah, she doesn't really...
She's not just evasive though, you know what I mean, like when she plays,
she's reactionary. And calculated.
Precise, calculated. She's very precise with how she uses force.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And they fight a little bit. Kuvira is using her metal things to pin her various places and stuff like that.
That's great.
The fight's broken up into chunks, so I guess we can...
Yeah. See, if Cora was really paying attention, she would just bend her suit so that she would be crushed and then... ba-da!
Maybe, yeah. She should probably manipulate her weapons on her suit to some degree, at the very least.
But then
yeah,
at the same point, like, Cora hasn't practiced metal bending very much, as far as we know, so Kuvira could probably counter.
Isn't she some master, though, who can bend metal out of her body? Like, that's kind of how the last episode portrays her a little bit. Two episodes
You know what? Ago. It's really not that hard. It doesn't even matter. That scene was completely ridiculous. If you had that much of anything in your body just, like, floating around, you would die.
Yeah, but that's the same as the book 3 finale, isn't it?
Like, I was pretty happy when I was like, yes, residual metal. That can be in your capillaries. It just kind of hangs out until you poop it out, okay?
But that, like, was a lot. Much, yeah, that was a lot.
Just hanging out, like, you would die. Like, that would clog up your arteries and your stomach lining and
your spinal cord. Lining. You would good. Okay.
Be a giant pile of... dead.
Of dead. Okay, giant that's good. Anyway, we're back to Varric and Bolin in the lab.
Fave scenes.
Varric says, Bolin, do the thing. What thing? I never had to tell Julie what thing. Varric says the vines were for energy, not a spirity death ray, as I clarified last podcast. Well, good job, me. And then he says he doesn't... The last time it shot out the thing, and it could still be blowing up comets in space, as far as I know. I don't think that's how energy works, but...
Radiation goes on forever!
Does it really?
X-rays go on forever. Radio waves go on forever. I'm not sure about all of them. That's physics.
I'll take your word for that, I guess. I don't know.
Well, radio waves don't.
I don't know.
Yes, they do. Radio waves go on forever.
Okay, I don't know.
They just going.
That seems wrong, but it could be right. I'm not sure.
Maybe it's not. Who knows?
Wrong.
Radio waves are no. Radiation,
look it up.
Yes.
I don't know if radiation
waves,
does either.
Like, they have the longest, but they don't go on forever.
Disclaimer, I don't know if any of what's being said right now is true. Okay, continuing
disclaimer,
on.
Disclaimer, it's not in physics. It's not biology. There are no cells involved.
Varric and Batar Jr. arguing about stuff. You couldn't discover a wolf bat if it was building a nest in your butt. You're
that
pathetic.
Was
wolf
like,
bats.
I had to stop and, like,
that was wonderful.
Your pathetic wolf bats don't build nests.
Good job.
Batar.
I love Bolin.
And
I
then,
feel like this would be what happened if me and Dylan had to go, like, build a thing. And I'd be like, Dylan. And Dylan would be like, well, they don't even do that.
Yeah, that would be me. That's true.
I'd be like, fine, Dylan.
And then the best line, potentially, of the episode. Varric says, you got me there, Dr. Science.
Dr. Science.
Dr. Science.
My favorite.
Dr.
I
Science
hate Batar, and Varric being rude to Batar is my new favorite thing. So great.
Hashtag Dr. Science.
Yes.
That needs to go in the collage.
It is a good line. There's also no background music. So is Varric responding to, though? With that, you got me there, Dr. Science. Who knows?
At the end. Just stick it at the end.
Just at the end, yeah.
Like, the whole thing's just like a giant Korathami.
I mean, the beginning.
Snide, so we'll just add it at the end.
Just add it at the end, obviously. Okay, back to Cora and Kuvira. Cora is still, Mel says, Cora's still losing, like, really bad. Opal tries to intervene, but Cora says no. So that's a summary of the fight. Okay. Back in Varric and Bolin, Batara Jr. is trying to understand what's going on. Varric's not paying much attention. Bolin is playing with the screwdriver. Varric gets the idea to use the spirit vines as... Garrick got the idea to see this, use the spirit vines as energy after seeing Godzilla Unalaq, a.k.a. Unavatu, says. So,
Batar is the dumbest character.
Batar seems to kind of understand what's going on, but he physically says, oh, it looks like this is just going to redirect it back at itself.
Are you building a bomb? No, I'm not building a bomb. He built a bomb.
Like, if this had been anyone else, they would have been like, think maybe you should stop now.
He pointed out literally everything that made it a bomb.
And then he just doesn't understand that it's a bomb. Like, yeah, it's
Batar.
True. It's true. What's that ticking? That's the timer for what? The bomb, of course. Varric made a bomb that will blow away the trains, including the vines. You'll be sorry you left me, Julie. When they write the history books, your name will be synonymous with betrayal. People will say, hey, what happened to that guy? Oh, he Varric'd himself because some girl Julie'd him.
That's great.
So other than a little bit of sexism here, which is in line with Varric's character, that's so good.
To work on that, okay? Like, Varric, you may be one of my favorite characters, but get yourself together.
Yeah, it's Varric and Julie just standing in for other things other than jewels and grams or pounds. Like, they mean multiple things now.
I just ship them so hard. It's bad.
I do ship them.
Last podcast, anyway, we said...
To beg forgiveness on his knees first. And then
last podcast, we said it's the second most likely ship to happen behind Jinkai. I don't know which one's more likely, but...
Makora.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's less likely than Issa, because there's a bigger chance of Kora just dying than of...
I'm just kidding, I just have to mention
Makora. There's a bigger chance of Kora just dying than of Julia.
Anyway. Masami has a 3% chance.
I think we're down to 2%, Britt. I think your chances are going down.
We get all those reunions next episode.
2% now, I don't know.
And Makora's just gonna get married.
Varric threatens to blow up the bomb early if they try to remove him from the train. I'm covering all my bases as to why he made a thing and a thing. He made a timer and we'll get back to the Varric scene. Back to Korra. Korra goes in the Avatar state, puts this giant rock above her head, and then Mel says, surprise, something. I bet you thought you saw the last of me. Miss Dark Avatar Korra says hi from Kuvira's face.
Yes.
Says Mel.
I screamed. Like, I literally screamed, and it was like 3 o'clock in the morning.
I, like, grabbed my chair and was making diagonal noises, and it was like 10 minutes ago.
And then it was 10 minutes. Oh, yeah, that's pretty recently. And then Jinora immediately says, after in the second bad line of the episode, I don't understand. We got the poison out. What's wrong with her?
Okay, Jinora.
Like, that was in the sinus.
On one hand, that's a terrible line. On the other hand, Jinora said it, so it's perfect. So, you know, I don't know what to think.
Okay, Dylan. There's nothing pedestally about that.
Korra becomes.
Just reminding the audience.
So, this is a big moment. This is literally them doing something which all of us said, you have to do this, and so they did know. In that, we need to bring Korra, just can't be cured after taking the metal outside of her. This is obviously something that had to happen, or else Korra alone becomes a worse episode, or else the season looks really bad. They're handling mental illness badly, but now they're not, they include it. Let's read what Sam has to say on this, because I specifically asked Sam to talk about this. Sam says, Dylan specifically wanted me to talk about the Dark Avatar Korra thing. So Korra's all Avatar stated up and is holding a giant rock over Kuvira, and Kuvira turns to face her, and poof, it's Dark Avatar Korra's face, and then Korra's like, crap, and falls, and Jinora's like, what? And we got poison out, what's going on? So that's the summary, says Sam. I like that Dark Avatar Korra is still a thing. We, meaning me and Dylan, and probably others, expressed that it there would have been really cheap and bad if she wasn't still a thing. Korra still has mental blockage, which is a good idea, which is good even though it's bad, you know? It sucks that she does, but in storytelling, it's good that she still has this thing, this struggle. It's a truth in life, too, I guess, in regards to mental health. No matter how good/better you think you've gotten, it's still always there, and it can take you down at any time, which, as I'm sure Dylan will say, stuff like a support system, professional help, etc., would help out with. that's another thing. Jinora doesn't know that Dark Avatar Korra is a thing. She doesn't know about Korra's mental struggles, and as far as we know, no one else does, not to the extent that it's gotten. I think that's something that might be addressed next episode, why Korra fell and didn't squish Kuvira. Korra might have to come out with having these things, which I've had to do in terms of mental health probs, and it's super scary. I'm not sure how it'll be for her, or if she's going to brush it off in the new future. Like, nah, I'm fine. I think it has to be addressed at some point. But what are we going to do about it? Take Korra to the therapist right then, and there, while their kingdom is in peril? I'm not sure. I mean, Korra really can't do much while this is still in her way, but the issue is so pressing that she can't just bail out and recover. I mean, she bailed out for 3 years, but she's back now, and she's the Avatar. She has to do something, or at least she feels she has to do something because she's the Avatar. Korra's running a weird parallel with my life again, because, again, I'm going through similar things at the end, says Sam. Okay, so, I mean, just a lot of good points there. So, obviously, the summary of specifically what's going on, they needed to address it again. Obviously, it's interesting to see what's going to happen next. And yeah, it seems like Korra's kind of pinned in. What's she going to do now? She has to take action and stuff like that, but she still has stuff wrong. Like, what's she going to do now?
She's going to have to make some third way of her own, like she usually does. You know what I mean?
Well, what could that third way be?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, the only thing that comes to mind in terms of helping her is her reuniting with everyone, the people who love her, even more than the kids, too.
And going to visit Zaheer.
Well, so, look at first.
Maybe she should just let Zaheer out and be like,
yeah, that's a great idea. Let Zaheer. Yeah, great idea. So,
first, you're on a leash and he can take out Kuvira. And then,
first of all, reestablishing a support system. Like Sam said, I'll talk about that. Meeting up with Asami and Mako and to a lesser extent Bolin. Well, she won't meet up with Bolin, but that's going to be very important to her. And it's not going to cure her, obviously, and it probably won't cure the visions, but having emotional support is, and maybe she can go to, it seems like she would never go to Mako with this, as much as, even the biggest Makora shipper, it seems unrealistic that Korra would go to Mako and spill about how their visions. I mean, would you disagree, Mara, or do you think that's true?
No, I don't think she's necessarily going to go to him. I think it's going to be discussed. Like, if they do go to visit Zaheer, which I'm pretty sure they will, I think, like, on that field trip or whatever, that they'll talk about the stuff.
But I could definitely see, like, Mako, like, being there while she, like, talks with Zaheer about it or something, and then she's like, Mako's like, I had no idea, and then Mako starts bringing it up with her, like, stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't think she's necessarily going to go to him.
Yeah, in terms of going to someone, it would definitely be Asami if she's going to, like, talk about it specifically with anyone, but even Asami, it seems a little far-fetched that Korra would just bring it up, but if it is going to be anyone, it's going to be her.
But I do think it's going to be brought up between her and Mako, though. Like, I do think Mako and her will talk about it.
I would agree that at some point
they probably will talk about it. I don't think he'll be first, though.
I don't know.
I can't really see. I mean, I really just have to wait for the reunion, but, like, I really can't see Korra and, like, Mako having a halfway normal conversation.
Well, I mean, they're going to have a conversation
They'll have some sort of conversation. Talking about the hallucination, it seems far-fetched, but at the same time, I gave you the scenario of where it might happen. You know, like, it's Mako hears it, and then it becomes a discussion that Mako brings up.
And
like,
we don't know what's going
to
happen.
She's not going to go to her.
And of course, we don't know that she's even going to Zaheer. So here's why we think they're going to Zaheer. In the trailer, Mako and Korra outside some large structure, and it's maybe a prison, and the White Lotus are there, and then we later see her inside and crystals and Earth Kingdom, and Jeff has theorized that the like wall closes behind Korra when she's in the trailer walking into the crystal place because it's like an airlock for Zaheer's prison, which
might
make
sense.
And it
seems like if you go back and look at the prisons that were in the beginning of Book 3, all of them had like elevators taking them down to like where all of the Red Lotus people were, so.
Yeah, they're definitely all separated and isolated, yeah. So that's possible. I'm honestly not sure why confronting Zaheer would help Korra, but
I mean, just facing, like, what happened to her in the past, like, I mean, I'm sure it doesn't make sense to us, but, I mean, the plot may be explored, like,
well,
maybe I need to face.
Well, that doesn't make sense, even if
it's on. It might make sense to Korra.
this is an example of us not having any information, so. Currently, I don't understand, other than the whole facing the past on such a literal sense, that doesn't make sense to me in any deeper than she's facing her past.
She's going to face her fear.
I'm gonna face my fear. Like I don't know.
She has that fear.
I don't
maybe
really.
She's gonna go stare him in the face and be like, "Yo."
I could definitely see this being a Korra solution to the problem, right? Like, oh, yeah. this is what I think I have to do, because Korra doesn't really understand too much, and like she understands what's going on, but she's with a very blunt solution. Korra's kind of a fan of those.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that she constantly sees, like in her flashbacks. She constantly sees that he's like trying to airbend like her breath or whatever.
It's interesting because
he's actually disappeared in the last few.
Dark Avatar Korra is not inherently Zahiri, yeah. So it's separate. So it's interesting, but I do agree. He's been the one she's seen the most, other than herself.
She could be going to see someone else, but who would that be?
Well, I don't know if she's going to see anyone. It could just be something else. But if
like,
that's
what
we're going to do.
Down there, would the dragons be down
well,
there?
Well, we don't know it's down anywhere. That's just a speculation.
It's clearly underground. There are rocks.
Yeah, but like we went when we were at the Crystal Caves in the Book 3 finale. Those were kind of not really underground. They were just somewhere. You know, they're like in caves. So like it doesn't necessarily have to be down. Crystals can be anywhere. Although
the last maybe they just decide to live under Kuvira's rule and be happy and have.
Oh well, kids. Now more this makes. This makes me
the
think
last
of
the shipping, Mako does go with her, though, so it has to be, like, something that is going to hurt, like, Korra, or...
Well, we don't really know why Mako's there. We also see them entering some other random building, though, so, like...
Yeah.
There could be other people there with them that are just not in the shot.
So this also makes me think of the crystals talk, makes me think of the rift as well. They're talking about crystal deposits being placed, the largest crystal deposit outside of Ba Sing Se. That seemed to be underground, I think they made them seem like. I don't know. Anyway, it's also Jin Yang, so who cares? Continuing on. Also, other than that, Jin Yang's actually written some good comics recently, but still. Where even were we? This is kind of a long tangent.
We're talking about how Jin Yang sounds like a name of a Korra, like a Korra character. Like it sounds like something Sue would name one of her kids.
Well, that's just because Sue's incredibly uncreative. Sue would not name her kid Jean. Jean is not an Asian name.
She didn't name one of them Avatar Junior. I don't know about
Avatar,
that.
I don't know. Yeah, what national Avatar is? But anyway, Kuvira says so. We got the poison out. What's wrong with her? We're not even done discussing Sam's thoughts. Sam kind of justifies Jinora's line by saying that Jinora doesn't understand what's going on, nor does anyone else. So that's what that line could be in reference to.
Mm-hmm. It needs to be addressed. I mean, the fact that no one knows, like that, it's going to be an issue. We just spent 10 minutes talking about it.
The problem with that line, I think actually in the script, it might be okay. I actually think this is storyboarded badly. She shouldn't say this immediately after it happens.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The second, like, there's no pause. It happens, and then you cut to Jinora saying this. There needs to be a pause there.
Like, the dust needed to settle.
I think Korra generally, as a show, has near-perfect direction as storyboarding, but I think this was a mistake. Because that line isn't inherently wrong. It serves a purpose, and, you know, Jinora's saying it, so it's great, so I don't know. Korra becomes scared and falls to the ground. She loses. I knew you were weak, says Kuvira.
Kuvira with her
Maybe
hair down.
Yeah, Kuvira with her hair frazzled and down and stuff.
I hate her so much.
No, Kuvira's great. I love her. She's the best.
You know what? You can just go marry her and be.
Yeah,
the
I want to. Like, come on, like get Batar out of the way and I'll marry Kuvira.
But like
this
I said,
is totally okay.
I really like that I hate her because like it's good because that shows I care.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think like
I have enough interest in her. Like, she's a good villain. Like, she's a good character villain, but I hate her.
I mean, obviously, I don't like obviously. No, actually, I wanted Kuvira to win. I didn't want Korra to win.
Oh my gosh!
Like, where would we do in this season if she killed Kuvira? What would we do?
Obviously,
I didn't want her to.
Kuvira,
like,
obviously,
win,
Korra
like,
was not
going to
win this episode. That's the thing with this episode. Everything that happens is very obvious. But
yeah,
like, we knew she wasn't going to win. But I feel like that. Like added to the suspense because we were just sort of sitting here waiting for the worst to happen.
Yeah, that's true.
So
it's kind of like Day of Black Sun.
I think
it was
that
like, well, they're not going to win. We have 10 episodes left.
If there's to be a criticism with Korra's fight structure, every fight that happens before the finale, the villains have to win, and then every fight in the finale, the villains have to lose. It's very
maybe we'll throw us through a loop. Maybe Kuvira will win, and everything sucks.
Yep. I am so excited to see Kuvira get her butt kicked, though. So excited.
I'm for the record, I'm closer to Delaney. I personally do like Kuvira. I don't really sign what she's doing.
I like
too objectionable.
Her as a villain.
No, I also just like her as a person. You know,
I think you all are terrible.
Also, she's
no,
just.
I mean, like, I don't think like I understand like being the whole like she's a villain and I hate her, but I like her as a character. But like, that doesn't mean, like, I was just excited. Two of my favorite characters were fighting each other, and Kuvira looked gorgeous doing it. Like, I can't hate
Kuvira. You just want to marry...
A large part of this is that Kuvira is a very attractive female.
Yes.
She's quite pretty.
Also, the fighting style, though. Her fighting style is incredible.
It's, like, a mixture of that, plus with, like this domination.
You admire
thing.
It.
Like, it's very... There's
a level of admiration going on.
I don't know if it's admiration, but it's something
I think
like
Dylan
that.
Is just in love with her, but...
Less so than Delaney, for sure.
Yeah, no one is... I'm more in love with Kuvira than Batar is.
Like, I think that's true, so I will also...
I have a question.
That. Yes?
Never mind, I'm not going to ask that question.
Okay. Act 3.
Okay.
You can type it in chat if you want.
I'm going to ask it on Tumblr, and then Dylan's going to reblog it with a read more and just be like, a sigh.
Now I have no idea what you're talking about.
Do you think...
No, don't ask it. No, Kuvira. If it needs a read more, it should not be on a podcast, okay? Just type it in chat. Kuvira attempts to... Oh, yeah, so Act 3. Mel says, Kuvira attempts to kill a disarmed and restrained Korra. So this is something that you might miss if you... Like, just by watching it once, like, yeah. Kuvira takes metal, makes it sharp, and then walks over to Korra, like, what are you gonna do? Like,
I think she was gonna decapitate her.
Yeah, yep. Kind of same yep. like that.
Definitely. Yep.
So
I can't see that going well in Kuvira's favor. Like, I feel like the whole world would be just a little angry.
To be honest, I don't think she actually, like, I think she was doing it, she would have stopped right before, like, she didn't want to kill Korra, like, that wouldn't have accomplished really anything. It's all about control and power and, like, showing Korra that she dominated her.
As always, you gotta be like Zhao and keep her alive just barely.
Exactly.
Just barely.
You got it.
Obviously. Zhao, like, we've gone through seven seasons now of Avatar and Korra, and Zhao got it right the first time he interacted with the Avatar. We have to keep you alive just barely. That's the solution. I mean...
If Zuko had interfered, we wouldn't have any more, because Zhao would
The show would have been over. Aang would just have been prisoner for Zhao, like, for the rest of... Yeah. I mean, he's so brilliant. Oh, isn't Zhao great? Okay. Opal and Janora intervene. You broke our agreements. Attack, says Kuvira.
Oh, like, if she had just said attack. Please don't say you broke our agreement. We get it. Yes,
attack. Janora and Opal make giant tornado. Janora's move from the
Yeah, it was like their signature move.
It's Janora's move, specifically. But yeah, Janora calls for help, Mel says in quotes. Janora's like, don't worry, I'm going to call for help. Goes,
yeah,
starts
my cell phone out.
Yeah, exactly. Iki,
I got my siblings on speed dial.
Yeah, exactly. Iki and Milo, so then we
I
cut
how
to,
useful this would be.
That's such a useful ability. Like, it's just teleportation. It's like better than teleportation.
Could be in two
places
at once.
This reminded me of the scene in Titanic where, like, everybody's like dancing and then all of a sudden it cuts to, like, the most boring thing. Like,
yeah, there. That's true. Yeah, like, so now
this is more in line for me with Star Wars and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I really enjoyed this little.
It was funny, but it was like in the way like it did not fit, and it was like so funny.
Iki and Milo are painting with Skrillex, and
I like how Iki.
Skrillex, I like how he decided he was a babysitter.
Skrillex loves Iki's emotions and stuff into her painting, which is just the stereotypical. 12-year-old girl painting.
Blinded me with your passion or whatever. Like that's what he says.
I will say, this painting is representative of the one-sidedness of Iki's character. She's very much just a Genki girl, and she doesn't have that much to her. And Genki girl is like a character trope and energetic and like happy-go-lucky, like young girl. And it's a very stereotypical character, but Iki's just, it's just a very sympathetic character anyway.
Yeah, I still think Milo.
I don't think she does a whole lot, and she's not super important to the plot.
She's not at all super important to the plot, as evidenced by this episode.
Really,
you don't need to have her as any more than
a lot of
character development. Agree,
she is, and she's just kind of...
Agree. But it would be nice...
We have party, so...
It would be nice to get into any sort of thing for Iki, you know, like, any sort of deeper character motivation. Like, Iki's just one of the very few characters on the show that doesn't have a love interest, right? Also, Iki notably has never expressed a romantic interest in anyone, which is interesting. She hasn't. In episode 5 or whatever, it was Janora was the one saying, who's that cute firebender boy, right? Like,
she ships it as much as I do.
Janora ship it? Does Janora still ship it? That's the question. It's been a while. I don't know.
No, Janora ships Masami.
I think Janora was shipping herself with Mako.
A little bit, yes.
I do think, yes.
No, Iki shipped Makora.
How does Iki... Oh, yeah, because she was giving advice. That's true. She gave all the advice.
I would love to give advice to this too, like
a punch bowl full of stars.
Yeah, Milo's painting. Milo's painting is this great thing, and Skrillex calls it what, pedestrian. Yeah.
Yes, it's incredible. It's great. Like everything about that.
I already know what you look like on the outside. Yeah. Know what you look like on the inside.
I still feel like Brian has done that, like to parallel his life, because I mean, in the interviews, like tons of interviews, he said that. As a kid, like he's always been able to draw like that, and I mean, I can just imagine.
Yeah, seems possible. This is yeah, but I mean, Brian's not scripting, but yeah, it seems possible.
Mike and Brian still talk, Dylan.
They do still talk, certainly. And Brian, I think it was interesting. Brian on I should have said this in news earlier, but Mike and Brian were on with David Faustino's radio show last Sunday. One of the things
Janet's gonna be on there this week.
Janet is on on Sunday. Yeah, one of the things they said was. Brian said, oh, people think I'm not involved in the writing process at all. I'm there. I'm not. But so what Brian means is that Brian is there in the planning phases for each season, which we do acknowledge on this podcast. So like before the season starts, they sit down and plan out the entire season, and Brian's a main component of that. That being said, after that, he is not in the writer's room. So specific things like this you would think aren't planned out beforehand and are just products of the script, but I'm not sure. Also said on that was that they are currently, Jeremy is working on the music on episode 12. They are waiting for animation to get back for the second half of episode 12 and all of episode 13. Basically, where I think they are in production is they're done with the first 9 episodes. 10 and 11 are in the later stages of post-production, and 12 and 13 have a lot of post-production to do. And so there's only a month and a half left, so that's going to be fun. They're going to be time crunched. Yeah.
Cut off, going, yeah. Oh my god! Oh my god!
Well, they can't really do anything until Mir gives them back the episodes. So
and Bakura is a hit forbidden fruit.
Yes, they did say that. Out of context, that is what they said. Yes. Okay. Jinora comes and asks them for help, and Mila's
Obi-Wan
like, yeah.
Kenobi. I need your like literally. Yeah,
it's Star Wars. Obviously, this whole season is Star Wars.
Yeah. I would like to say I was talking to Escalations and where's Kai? One and then. Kai would be way more helpful to talk to than her siblings.
Okay, that makes me think of two things. One, so it's obvious Kai isn't in the city after this episode. Yeah. But if Kai was there, Jinora would come up, and it would be like, Kai would be like, hi, and it would be like, blush, and hi. And it would take, it would like, be this, like, this awkward pause before Jinora was like, oh crap, I actually have to tell you something important. And they'd just be like caught up in each other before Jinora could relay the news. Yeah, okay, there's my 5 seconds Jin Kai fanfic for the podcast.
Yes.
Okay, continue on. They're on the train and they've cleared. They cleared the other guys and Ferrix says, "Bolin, do the thing." Oh, unhook the cars. That was an easy one. That was the greatest one. Great. Yeah,
that was beautiful.
That was the best Ferrix, other than Doctor Science.
Doctor Science.
So okay, now we can talk about the logic of this. The bomb was real, and Bolin tries to find a way out. Ferrix says, "I'll see you on the other side, Julie."
Killing me.
Like, so one, Julie's not dead. Like,
Varric, what are you doing?
Okay.
Well, eventually, Varric is gonna die, and eventually Julie is gonna die because she's not immortal, so.
I mean, she seems kind of perfect, so I don't know about that. Bolin smacks him, slaps him, smacks him. I want you to know I hate you.
Also great.
And then they escape through this patch underground, then presumably Bolin burrows them into the earth. The bomb blows up, but Tara Jr.'s weird bug eyes doe, says Mel. And he says that he was crazier than a sewer pipe elephant rat.
The eyes, though.
How terrifying would an elephant rat be?
Really sweet.
Have you thought of that, an elephant rat?
Living in the sewer?
In the sewer? Okay.
Be gross, covered in so much E. coli and salmonella and Pseudobotus and
Pseudobotus.
Mysterious.
I have no idea what that is.
It's just an elephant rat.
But yeah,
I would
elephant
just want
to
disinfect it. Like, it would get near me and I would just be like, here's some...
What if it's a human? What if
full alcohol? I'm just gonna rub this all over your body.
What if it's an elephant-sized rat?
I would cry.
Maybe it's a really small rat that just looks like an elephant.
Yeah, that's true. It just has
that
a trunk.
That could be true.
Yeah.
That could be true.
Okay. Well, Varric, they appear back up above ground. Varric says, "Bolin, you did the thing." And yeah, okay. So here's the thing. Here's the deal. I think that there's two. If you try to look into Varric's motivations at all during this, there's two possibilities. Possibility number one is that Varric did not plan ahead beyond getting Batar and crew away from the bomb and the spirit vines. He wanted it to blow up so that he could not have that technology get into the wrong hands. His conscience was really driving him here. He didn't care if he went in the process, but he needed to make sure they didn't get this death ray. So that's option number one, and I think there's support for that.
I think there's support for that. I think he's one of those people that's complex enough that a lot of things drive him, so.
So it's interesting, though, because it could just be option number two, which is door number two, which is Varric had planned out the entire thing. He had planned out himself acting like they're going to blow up. He had planned out Bolin reacting to that and saving them both. He was manipulating Bolin the entire time. He's making everything around him. And he basically was trying to drive Bolin to save him. He had no intentions of actually blowing himself up. He just wanted to act that way so Bolin would get them off the car. And it also maybe happened to coincide with number one, where we get don't let the technology get into the wrong hands.
Varric,
I think is Jack Sparrow. Both.
That's the thing. Is there support for him?
I think he had hoped for the second one, but the first one was his main objective.
Did Varric plan ahead with Bolin saving them? I think it's a really hard question to answer based on the episode.
I think he planned for them to get away, and that's why he like manipulated them to bring Bolin, because that was his plan, was to get away.
Yeah.
But he could do it and like kill both bases. You know when he says the thing like where he made a timer and a remote? Like, Varric plans things out. He's very smart. I don't think I think he's smarter than most people give him credit for.
The problem...
So I think he planned it. I think he planned both things. He planned for them to escape, not necessarily that he was just manipulating Bolin and just doesn't care about him.
Well, it's not that he doesn't care. He can still manipulate him and care, for his own good. So the thing is that if you just watch the scene where the car blows up, it certainly doesn't seem like Varric has any intention of escaping, right? He says, I'll see you on the other side, Julie. And he's like, oh, there's no way to get out, you know, we're screwed, like, to Bolin. Like, so, but if you look, like, why did he need Bolin in the first place? Why would he put them in a situation where they would blow up? That doesn't make sense. Why would he do that? Logically, like, I don't get it. So I think it probably has to be that he planned this. He planned for Bolin to save him, and it's supported by the fact that he says, "Bolin, you did the thing at the end." Like he's happy with him. At the same time, that's very incongruous with how he acted on the train. I think what they're going for is he did want Bolin to save him. He didn't actually have any intention of dying, but they didn't necessarily make that super clear, or clear at all, or clear without baseless speculation. You know.
Well, I feel like they were really, in support of that, they were pushing this plot line as Varric is actually smart, and, like, Varric can do things, and, like, as opposed to, you know, we were all like, Varric's a goofball, Julie's, like, the actual smart one, Varric's kind of okay. Like, I think they're really pushing, like, how intelligent Varric actually is.
He's just not very, how do I say this, practical? Like, day-to-day life. Like, he's great with grand things
certainly, but he
can't do his own laundry.
We get that with him, his sleep thing, when he's talking to Julie. At the very least, Varric is definitely clearly manipulating Batar the entire time. So the question is that extend the Bolin? And I think the answer is yes, but, like, why aren't we making this clearer? Because we have to maintain Varric's image of instability. So I think the episode does do a good job of portraying him as somewhat logical and smart and actually knowing clear-headed while still preserving his craziness. So
he's like a slightly more logical Jack Sparrow. Like he's an odd mixture of things.
He's an more unstable Jack Sparrow, but at the same time,
Jack Sparrow's pretty unstable. Did you see the scene where he like attacks the giant octopus with a sword, and he's like, it's like spitting in his face, and he's like, this is gross.
That's a good question. Who's more unstable, Varric or Jack Sparrow?
Well, it's like they're presenting Varric, or attempting to, or at least that's what we're talking about. Varric is presented as maybe having a plan. Jack Sparrow never has a plan.
He just thinks on his feet.
Yeah, it's an interesting character.
Jack Sparrow's like Boomy.
Who's not been like... in the season so far, yeah.
Who is Varric like? Like, I'm trying to, like, think of another character in literature we can, like...
There's probably quite a few, but... Not off the top of my head, Of note, other things Mike and Brian said in the interviews is that Kaya won't be in the season again. That was her farewell. Mm-hmm. Sokka won't be in the season. These are not things... I know it's upsetting that Kaya's not going to be in the season again. Kaya's great. It'd be great to explore
that
character.
Is it bad? I don't really care.
So, I mean, Escalations was very upset about this.
She's not super important.
But to me... I love Kaya. Kaya actually was one of the side characters I care about. But to me, I would much rather focus on the characters that are relevant to the plot, because there's so many of them that we need to focus on the characters that are actually, like, major characters. Like, you see what happens, even if we leave out Kaya, Jinora still doesn't have lines for the first three episodes. Like, even then, we still have to sidetrack some characters. They've written too many characters, yes, on purpose they've done so, but now we need to push them aside. Kaya had a lot of fight scenes in book three.
Yeah,
honestly,
she
had a lot.
It's just irritating because, like, we're getting Bumi and Tenzin, but it's like Kaya to me is the most interesting. And,
yeah,
like,
I agree.
We haven't explored her at all.
And it's, I agree. Really, Kaya's just way more interesting than Bumi, and we've seen more Bumi, so that's a little frustrating. But that's okay.
Because, like, I agree with you, and, like, you know, definitely we need, like, some characters have to be pushed to the side, but that's the irritating part.
It is. They shouldn't have brought in as many characters as they have.
Yeah, no. They shouldn't have brought any.
Prince Wu is not a necessary character.
Giving Kaya, like, a strong, like, more. Like, a better farewell scene, you know what I mean? Like, she didn't get a farewell. She was just kind of disappeared.
No, that's your Teen Wolf reference for today. Okay.
Too many characters.
Yeah. Well, I actually think Korra... Who has more characters? They're similar. I actually think Korra...
Right now, let's just let it go.
I think Korra has more characters, actually. Game of Thrones has more than either of them, but it's
people, yes.
But George R. R. Martin writes 1,000-page books.
Yeah, it doesn't translate as well into the show. Yeah, okay.
And Brick does not.
They don't. Okay, back to
no.
Back to we should. Yeah, Mike writing a 1,000-page book. That's awesome.
I would love a novelization of, like, an actual.
It has to be by one of the writers, though. That's the thing. Yeah. Back to Zhaofu. Milo brings Pepper. Iki's also on there. She's just in the background, not doing anything. To save Korra, Opal, and Jinora, they escape onto there. Iki sits there while Milo bends at them. That's great. Opal wants. This is another storyboarding thing I'm not thrilled with. Iki just kind of sits there the entire time. She needs to be there eventually to, like, grab them onto the bison, but she could have done something in the meantime. Opal wants to save her family, but Sue urges her
to
leave.
The feels.
I love you. This is the third bad line of the episode. I always love you. I love you. What'd she say? There's something like
I
that.
I think they're just being ridiculous with this thing. Like, I thought the other lines were justifiably bad, but, like, what are you going to yell to your mom if you're being dragged
I
think she's going to be assassinated by, like, Kuvira. Like, what would you say?
She should have said, I love you, mommy. No, JK.
Dylan, this is why you will never be on television.
I loved it, and I almost cried.
It happened. I don't think the line itself was bad. I think it just happens very fast. The city is taken.
Shout out to Allison Stoner, because that was a really good raid, I think.
Allison Stoner is very solid as Opal and has been. Yeah, she's very good. Now to the two last Kuvira scenes of the episode. I thought these were phenomenal. Bring the citizen, or yeah, this is this no is this the last scene?
I think so.
Yeah, bring the citizens of Zhaofu to kneel before the Great Unator.
No,
all
that's
pledge
the second last thing.
Yeah, all who pledge their loyalty to me will keep their freedom and be treated fairly as full citizens of the Earth Empire. The rest of them will be imprisoned as traitors like Su Beifang and her sons now bow. Yes, this is the second last scene with Kuvira.
Yeah.
It's the same music cue, but yeah. Batar and Skrillex bow, and Batar Jr. gets very upset. And he's like, bow! And then... Do you, like, I'm so disappointed in you, Junior?
Batar has daddy issues.
Yeah.
He has such bad daddy issues, but this scene was very, I don't know why, maybe not for the rest of you, but to me, it was very emotional. Like, I was, like, ready.
It was, no, I agree. I think it was largely the,
To see him, like, lock away his family, like, were they really that awful to him? Did he... I don't think it's that.
I think it's just, like, the divide.
His daddy tell him, I am so disappointed in you. Not that I hate you, not you're awful, but just that I am disappointed. I was like, I need to go hug every single member of my family and promise that I will never
betray them.
Be that terrible oldest child.
I agree the scene is, like, emotional,
you need
even
to go
though.
Sit in time out.
Even though these characters aren't super important or sympathetic. The credit to Jeremy Zuckerman's cue for ramping up at right before Batar Jr. gets mad. It's a good time for the cue to ramp up. It goes dun 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 dun, dun, you know that one, mm-hmm. which we hear a lot. And
Even though Batar might not be, like, the most it's interesting that, like, he's, like, bow to her, like, it's all about Kuvira, like, just, like, the intensity of his feelings. That's what got me.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it doesn't come off as romantic as much.
Yeah, not romantic, but just, like, the fanaticism. Like, it's like, wow, like, we're seeing this.
I mean, are they
bow to her.
They're
married,
but they don't seem to be in love. They just
we haven't seen any PDA from them, yeah.
We haven't even seen like any when they were alone. They weren't lovely WWE.
Yeah,
we
saw them alone and they didn't interact like that.
Afterwards?
We discussed. I feel like we discussed this.
Do they make out? Have they kissed?
Not.
What would you get them as a wedding present?
That's the best question.
What would their wedding be like?
A new Earth Kingdom territory.
Or would she just get married?
No, she'd get married in her military gear. Yeah, military gear.
Batar would wear the dress.
I don't think she'd let Batar wear.
What do you think of? What do you think of Batar Senior calling? I'm so disappointed in you, Junior. No, he says Junior.
Did he say Junior?
Yeah. Is this how Senior and Junior, father and son, work? Do you call a person Junior?
Like, I hate. Don't call.
Is that how that works? I honestly don't know.
He called him Junior in season 2 of Avatar. This is my grandson Lee, but he's named after his father, so we just call him Junior.
That's true. Good catch. Yes. In Cave of Two Lovers, yeah. And then Zuko gets really mad, gets really mad at that.
Irritated.
That's a reference. No, I don't think that's a reference, but yeah. They're arrested. Get your hands off me. You're crushing my individuality, says Skrillex. One of the best lines of the episode.
Yes, that would be beautiful.
Skrillex is great.
It's funny because they literally are kind of taking his individuality.
Yeah, that's literally what's going on.
So,
that's
okay.
What's actually going
on. But it's fun. Okay. And Batara Jr. then tells Kuvira about, in a second scene, tells Kuvira about a meeting of the inner circle, it seems like.
The inner circle.
The inner sanctum. Kuvira Jr. tells Kuvira about the explosion. He thinks he can replicate his work, which that line was very needed. If you can't just bring up the Spirit Vines thing and then just have the plot go away. So
I loved how it focused on Kuvira, like, bending metal. Like, it was doing it, like, in a very precise way. Like, I mean, that was very representative of her character.
As we point out previously on the podcast, all shots of Kuvira seem to be pointing up at her face. And, Julie, they say he needs an assistant, and Julie's like, yes, okay.
The look.
We need to talk about her face.
Yes, her face.
She's very non-emotional.
I'm surprised Kuvira has not, like, kind of thought she might be.
Well, question, are Kuvira and Batar in the scene looking at her skeptically?
I
think that's, you can read this as that, because they stare at her for a long time. Like, we're talking about them not putting a pause between Miss Dark of Dark Core and and Jinora's line. There's a super long pause here.
Before he says Julie. Like, she's just staring at Julie.
I think she's like trying to analyze her, trying to see what's
there.
Yeah,
that's what I thought was going on.
But Julie is just like a blank slate, so she doesn't get anything.
Yes.
Yeah. And Julie's third in command, you know, she's in a serious position to change the world. Julie.
And also,
like,
the way she walks away, like, what? Like, you know what? Like, the way Julie walked away, like, I was like, what? Like the actual, like, her actual posture.
I didn't notice that.
It's really stiff, and, like, it's a very interesting, like, way that she walks away. You have to watch it a few more times. Like, it looks very strange, in a good way. It's just...
In a good way, strange in a good
way.
Like,
she's very robotic.
I think that's what she's supposed to come off in the scene as. Yeah.
We didn't talk about her clapping during the fight.
Oh, yeah, she was clapping. They cut to her clapping. I thought that was really funny. They cut to her clapping after Kuvira was talking.
Her her little hat, and she's just
episode totally convinced me that she is just being on Kuvira's side for you know,
just to betray her later.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of them.
Do we talk about this? How I think,
oh, what
Julie is just gonna take her down because it's the most obvious route in the path of resistance is to get
I wasn't
on her
quite
side
sure.
and then betray her.
So, I mean, last podcast, basically everyone said we thought Kuvira was, Julie was going to betray him. I'm a big fan of them not immediately paying this off in this episode.
You know, I want it to be a while.
This episode's trying to convince you that Julie actually is on Kuvira's side while maintaining some skepticism because it's like, oh, you'd expect her to just immediately, she's in position to betray her several times, right? Like, she acts as the body double. She could have, like, tried to warn them earlier or something like that. Like, there's a lot of instances where she could maybe do something, but she's waiting. And I think it's really well done because that would just be somewhat uninteresting plot if she turned right away.
Like, I'm hoping season finale we're going for.
I don't know if we're in for that long of a con.
I want it to be that long.
That's
we'll probably get it by about episode 10.
We'll see.
We're at 13. That's 3 left, you know.
So,
and I think when she does, if she does, I'm gonna say if or slash when she does, it's gonna be a major blow. Like, yes. I think Julie's in this, like, long game, you know?
She, yeah, no, that's so she, long game.
She probably, the longer she waits, the more of an impact she will probably have.
Yes.
One thing, the more she'll be let into plans, the more she'll know, the more she can...
One random note is I like how Kuvira tries to appeal to what Julie said in her speech previously. So, like, the way she phrased having Julie help Batara Jr. is that, do you want to help him make the greatest weapon, like, ever? That seems like something Julie would be interested in based on her speech she made last time. So that's a good job by Kuvira.
Kuvira is A-plus manipulator.
Yeah, at the same...
She's, like... up there, Dumbledore level.
Last note, bringing up a possibility, possible that Julie is very self-interested here and that she will eventually take down Kuvira and become the main villain of the season.
I'm cool with that.
I don't think that's what's going to happen, but I think it's possible. Nope. Like, we're focusing on Julie a lot. Like, she needs to do something major.
Yes.
And then the last line of the episode, which I'm completely in love with, we're going to analyze for like 5 minutes, is begin dismantling the domes, says Kuvira. Hashtag begin dismantling the domes. I tweeted it. You should go tweet hashtag begin dismantling the domes. It has six favorites also. So there. Six is a lot. So I love these type of endings, like these symbolic endings to episodes. Like, there's no way to neatly tie up here. I love that at the end where we say, okay, the Spirit Vines plotline isn't over. Okay, we're addressing Julie, which is another interesting part going out of this, and begin dismantling the dome. So in a literal sense, this means... Delaney immediately goes on Twitter and favorites begin dismantling the domes.
You're welcome. Retweets.
So in a literal sense, this means open up Zaufu. It is not isolated anymore. So it's not getting literal. Now we're getting symbolic. Zaufu is no longer isolated from the Earth Kingdom. It is a part of the Earth Empire. Take down the domes that were separating it from the rest. Unite Kuvira's empire.
Symbolism.
Yes, and it's like, take away, in a literal sense, it's take away the protections around the city. Yeah. Let my army in.
And it also parallels Ba Sing Se.
It does parallel Ba Sing Se too, and kind of what was going on with Zaheer last. I mean, there's a lot of Zaheer parallels. The speaker talking, making a speech to the citizens, and then taking down the wall, taking down the domes. It's thematically sets up the rest of it's just I like not ending on a I like ending on this type of line a lot. Like, I think this is just a really good way to end. The hashtag begin dismantling the domes. Yes. And it's also like she can like literally like she's now it's interesting she's not doing it herself, but she like has the force, the capability to take down the defenses very easily. And I don't know.
And it just shows like they made the right choice because she could have just annihilated them.
Bless you, Britt. Britt has the cutest sneeze ever. There you go.
Yes, bless you.
It's true. Bless you, and Mare has favorited the tweet. Thank you guys. You're paying a lot of attention to the podcast. And
and on Tumblr the whole time.
Oh my god.
Hey.
And that's okay. That's what everyone who's listening to a podcast is doing, just scrolling through Tumblr.
I wasn't on Tumblr.
Thank you. I also have not been on Tumblr, actually. I will have to check before we get in the feedback to see if anyone else has that stuff. Okay. I just really like the ending. I really like the scene choice with the Batara and Batara Jr. stuff was executed excellently. Kuvira talking to the citizens. By the way, we get random now. We got shots of actual Zaufu life in the beginning of this episode.
They all wear the same outfits. Their fashion sense is very...
I don't understand the metal necklaces or whatever. And, like, I don't understand.
We didn't.
Like,
I think more generally, we hadn't seen actual citizens of Zaufu before, so this was nice.
We just
to
saw
see.
Guards.
People. It seems like people are actually like go about life inside the zone, the domes, which was not clear. Honestly, I mean, we assume so, but we just hadn't seen it. We just seen guards, Sue's people, and acupuncturists, right? Like, anyway. That will be. I think that's it for plot stuff. Any other plot things before we grade the episode?
Nope.
Okay. Let us grade this. So we're going to grade this out of 10. A 5 is an average episode of television. I don't know if you can hear stuff on my end. A 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen. Let's grade this out of 10. Let's start with Britt. And why?
I would give it a 7.5. There you go.
A 7.6.5?
Yeah.
I don't think that makes math
breaking the rules, Brid.
Fine, I give it a 7.6. It was
what?
A great episode. I think it's one of my favorites. I don't think it was good enough to give it an 8 because there are some line issues that were very on the nose. But the humor was good. The pacing was much better. I want to talk about the humor. I enjoyed all the plot. I enjoyed it emotionally. And it was just a nice episode.
Hooray. So a 7.6.5. Got it. Okay.
No, it's a 7.6. 7.6.5 doesn't make any sense.
Delaney.
I'm going to give it an 8.5. Okay. I really enjoyed this episode. The Kuvira is great. I thought it was a really solid episode. Yes, a lot of the lines were in the sinuses, but all of book 4, the lines have been in the sinuses. Like, this is not a new thing with Korra. The lines are in the sinuses. This is a thing that happens. And Janor and Opal, and it just had all my favorite people except Lin, and it was great. And I like the focus on the Beifong family, and I just love it. I thought it was a great episode. So, 8.5.
Mare.
I'm going to give it an 8.9 because I don't think it deserves a 9, but I think like it deserves more than an 8. I really liked it. I really liked all the stuff with Kuvira and Bolin and Varric, and I just really liked it. And I think it was, like, I gave The Calling an 8, so I thought this one definitely deserved more than that.
Not only was Mare on Tumblr during the podcast, she calculated the number of minutes left in the season. On Tumblr. So,
extra
okay.
Not paying attention. You did math.
I think you use a calculator.
I multitask.
Yeah, okay. 9.8. Yeah, I agree. I think it was better than The Calling. But I don't think it was, like, significantly better. Like,
that's
so
why
I
gave it an 8.5, because I gave last episode an 8.
Yeah, so
like,
I gave...
It doesn't deserve a 9, but it doesn't deserve an 8, like, either. So,
I basically agree with you. So I'm at an 8.5 here. I give the last 3 episodes an 8.
Why does this keep happening?
So the last 3 episodes were an 8. This is better, but not at the level. So, like, so this would be in the very good tier still, I think. It's, like, not quite in the amazing tier if you follow my episode rankings. So, like, a 9.5 close to, or around there would be an amazing tier. This one would still be in the very good. It's encouraging that we're on the way up after 3 pretty stagnantly very good but not incredible episodes, I would say.
They were very plot-heavy episodes. They didn't have much going on the way of resolution.
Well, this episode was just so refreshing, I thought.
Yeah.
So, like, if you... So, it's very possible we're at the halfway point this season. So last season, there's basically episodes 1 to 6, then breather episode 7, and then the second half. 1 to 6 were all expository episodes. Episode 7 had nothing to do with the rest of the season and was a great one-off. And then episodes 8 to 13 were all about Zaheer. And it's not clear if this season will follow the same structure, but these were certainly a lot of exposition here in the beginning. Although this was more action-oriented, plot-heavy than any of episodes 1 to 6 were for book 3.
Yes.
So it's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting to see where we go. So I have... We'll discuss that more. I have thoughts from Mel and Sam.
Mel thinks.
Mel, it's time for Mel's Thinks, the segment where Mel provides her thinks. There you go. That's the tagline. Mel says, I think this episode was stronger than last week's in both structure and story. The A and B plots were both equally intriguing and tied together a lot stronger. I specifically liked Kuvira and Korra's interactions in this episode. I think it's very organic and realistic for where Korra is in her story and who Kuvira is. The fight scene was beautifully choreographed, and the entire parallel and or juxtaposition of those two against each other was well done, and not too incredibly on the nose, though Kuvira does continue to have some on the nose dialogue. I like this that the season is more about characters besides Korra, and that expands it a great deal and follows the pattern we have this season with questioning the relevance of the Avatar. I like that we're 6 episodes in and she still hasn't returned to Republic City. I think the pacing of the season is very on point. I'd grade the episode 7.7. It was better, but nothing the season has blown me away so far. My insert is Korra alone, ? But it's okay. Mel says, I love the inclusion of Miss Stark Avatar Korra again, and I think the way she showed up was beautiful. A lot of people theorized Kuvira would use the metal in Korra's body against her, and I'm glad it ended up being mental on Korra's part, as Miss Stark Avatar Korra continues to be a fixture in her psyche and a hindrance. Yeah.
Yes,
agree.
All
okay, Sam says, other than the long parts I read of Sam's already, Batara Jr. is such a little blank. He
yes,
needs to go he needs to
Sam,
go away.
Thank you, Sam.
I'm sick of him being a brat. You're like 30. Grow up. And how does he not see that Varric is making a bomb? He said a thing about energies is being redirected back to the source. Batara Jr. is such a blank. I hope he dies. Wow.
Yes. No, I'm
wow.
with Sam.
Okay.
Okay, I don't want him to die, but I'm with him.
I don't want him to die, but I want him to feel
Like, I want someone to knock
punishment.
Him out.
I want someone to punch him in the sorry, face. Mommy.
Continuing.
I want Kavera to betray him, and I want him to,
no.
like...
No, yeah. no,
not betraying
I don't know,
him,
I don't know
like,
if I could. Oh, I don't know if I could handle that. Ooh.
Like for her to get mad at him and him just be left alone, and he has to like sit there and think about what he's done.
Continuing Sam's thoughts.
Sorry,
Kuvira is no problem. Kuvira is here. Okay, that's an entire bullet point. What is this non-aggression vow? Is that just a thing that happened recently? I don't like that the Airbenders are like a gang. Why can't Airbenders just not be a part of the Air Nomads? Is that a thing? It should be. If I were an Airbender, I'd just be like, LOL, see ya, and leave those punks.
You see, this is the problem where I could never be in charge of anything, because I would be right with me. I'd be like, I don't have time for this today. Let's go get some food and just not deal with this.
Sam says, I hate Milo. Sam says Varric slash his VA John Michael Higgins is the saving grace of this episode. Honestly, the B plot with Varric was the only part I genuinely enjoyed here. Bolin and Varric just need their own show. I like the seriousness with Varric too, and how he was willing to die, though he probably knew he'd get out of it somehow. Interesting. Sam says the dialogue in the A plot sucks. The A plot is just so boring. I'm bored. I mean, it could have been done better, just like a one-on-one fight. It's just boring. Who decides when the fight is over? Hello. Like, maybe it could have been sectioned off into one act, but not spread out. Snore. Cora/Opal/Jenora, the short hair gang.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Sam says Skrillex is a guy. His little part just seems like LOL art school or art joke. Bad art is actually bad. But art people praise it. Shut the blank up, you blank. All probably went for animation, which is completely different from the fine arts / specific painting. As a fine arts major and pretentious blank, I don't like the sentiment you're getting at with this joke, or just using him as a joke for artists. Don't like that. Interesting. Sam's like criticizing Mike and Brian for joking about that when they're not like in that field. Interesting.
It's a joke that happens a lot. Like, this is like, I wasn't sure if it was like a trope or not, but like this happens all the time.
Yeah, he's a stereotype. Yeah, I don't know. I understand why Sam wouldn't be cool with
Sam's
it. It makes sense.
Opinion stand. Her opinion is more important.
She goes to art school. She has knowledge of this. Experience. Yeah, I agree. Let it stand. Okay. What was Kuvira planning to do with her metal spiky things when she had Kuvira bound in the earth? Cut up her face?
She's going to make her into the Joker, guys, and then she's going to come back and just destroy everything.
Oh, Julie is definitely still loyal to Varric. I'm sure of it now, says Sam. I also wanted to add that I probably shouldn't have bought an Earth Kingdom shirt because it isn't the Earth Kingdom anymore. I love that
Empire.
Thought from Sam. Yeah. Sam's like, that's Sam's so just different. Worried that her shirt's out of date now. It's great.
Yes.
Sam
just cross
says,
it off with Sharpie.
I'm giving it a 5.5, which is subject to change in the future. Maybe I didn't feel like watching this today. Yeah. Dependent on emotional states, I feel that grading things.
I need to stop watching him at 3 in the morning.
Whenever I woke up and watched it at like 7:30 this morning, I always think it's worse the first time I watch it early in the morning. Like it always happens. I need to be in a better
early in the morning. This is why I go to class for 2.5 hours.
No, I mean I can't go to class knowing the Cora episode is there. Oh my goodness,
I get really amped up for it sitting in chemistry, and then I watch it.
No, you have to watch it. You don't pay attention.
Sure, I make sure I rewatch it before I go to my next class, though, because rhetoric just makes me so upset that I can't enjoy anything afterwards.
I go to sleep at like 12 and then set my alarm for 2:59.
Yeah, I should mention again, I just really hate how Nick is releasing these episodes. I just despise it. Like, why don't you put them out at a time when people are awake?
It's
horrible.
Evil.
Just terrible. Like, I also just think their logic is just completely wrong. This is the way they think the episodes will get the most exposure. No, like it's no. I mean, it's possible their online team is hindered by the decisions made by other teams in Nick in terms of releasing it on Amazon at 3 a.m. But that's also Nick's fault. It's just a different part of Nick. Go away, Nick. Basically, I'm done with you. Release the core episodes. I don't think we should support it. I honestly don't think we have to. Like, some people still get annoyed when you don't watch the core episodes on Nick.com. It doesn't matter. They're going to release them anyway. We're done with this. They don't need a renew core anymore. We're done
like,
with this
they
network.
Don't care.
It doesn't matter. It's not like us not watching on Nick.com is not going to make them release it. Or, oh, and then people are like, oh, you have to show Nick that the show supports that they'll order another Avatar series. No, they're not going to do that anyway. They took Korra off the air. They're not doing that. Mike and Brian don't want to do it, and they're not going to order another series. It's not happening.
They're seriously mocking us. They're going to air book 4 on Nicktoons.
Them airing book 4 on Nicktoons. Like, are you serious? It makes sense, but I don't know.
The fact that we have to they're releasing it online, but LOL, you've already seen it. Now we're going to put it on TV.
Have they even finished airing book 3 on there? I know they started it, but I don't even think
they were scheduled to finish it. I'm not sure if they ever did. I assume they did, but I don't know. Anyway, in conclusion,
Nick is the worst.
We don't care. You don't have to support Nick anymore. There's no reason to. They're releasing book 4, and they're going to release it no matter what because they're making money on it. We can say screw them and move on. Honestly, we can. Okay. Let's get into your thoughts, which I think is just one. So we have one Tumblr message and one email. Anon says, I see Kuvira dismantling the domes as one of two things. The first is an analog for removing the protection of its people so they can't rebel. The second is somehow using Zhaofu as the launch pad for Vine weapons. Thoughts? So that's interesting.
How would that be legitimate?
Vine weaponry, how is she going to,
It doesn't exist yet. No, but so you build a large weapon and you launch it from Zhaofu, you can do that if domes were there, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's just supposed to be symbolic.
Okay.
Yeah, it's supposed to be symbolic.
She's going to make a giant death ray in the sky. Is she going to blast it into space and they're going to have satellite warfare like Reagan tried to do during the 1980s?
Yes.
Because the domes are what stood for Zhaofu and them being gone.
Gone. I think it's interesting to think about how she's going to use the weapon in the future. I think this is a general way.
I mean, it makes sense that they would have one place for designing stuff on trains is stupid. I don't know why they think this is a good idea. Don't do science on a train. No, it would make sense to me to do it somewhere and of course Zhaofu is the center of technological advancement as it's been presented in this season and last season. So I think there's validity to it being Zhaofu, being where the weapon will be born and possibly the beam doesn't even seem to have that long of a reach. The explosion, that was very, it'll be interesting to see if they actually focus it.
Hashtag begin dismantling the domes.
Yes.
Okay. Some thoughts from our friend Greg Serafin, who runs SensibleReason.com. So the fact that Kuvira would agree to do this in place of a battle, which he would surely win, is both a sign of her extreme confidence in her own fighting ability and implies knowledge of Korra's current situation, but also is indicative of the qualities of a good leader. This makes Kuvira more endearing to both the in-universe people and to me in general. Kuvira, out of any of the past villains, seems the most pragmatic and the villain that has the least mysterious origins or sketchy background that makes us question her true motives. I agree. I think Kuvira is pretty transparent. It's really refreshing to know what's going on.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
In comparison to Aman, who was great great in the build-up, but then we're not going to get a terrible payoff with Kuvira. We know that, so that's good. Okay. Greg says, Varric, love that he credits Unavatu with his inspiration. Varric, while still being his arrogant self simultaneously seems really broken up about Julie abandoning him. And then I don't know. Side note, is this the first same-sex kiss in the Avatar universe? Do Varric and Bolin kiss?
I thought so, yeah. I don't know why, doesn't he kiss his cheek or something?
I don't think
it's forehead.
Yeah. Okay. Forehead, so I don't think this counts as a kiss, but
I don't think it counts.
This is the first time we've seen anything like that. That's true. He says, I'll bait just one on the forehead and not meant to be sexual rather celebratory. But that's true. It is the first time we get into any sort of thing like this.
It's the first sort of non-romantic kiss that we get. Do we even get the mothers in the show kissing their children? I don't think we do.
There's not that many parents in the Avatar world, but yeah, I don't know. Greg says, I'm really happy about the fact that even when Cora seems in her peak physical condition on top of a tornado holding a giant chunk of Earth in the air, she still has a reoccurring vision of Miss Stark, Avatar, Cora, that has been plaguing her. I was really concerned that this story arc would not be reprised in a major way, but the hallucination causing Cora to lose this battle makes it so Toph didn't just throw her quote-unquote magic Avatar curing insults at Cora, and she was totally fine in all respects.
Well, Mike and Brian said that it wasn't going to be that way.
I don't know if they said that it wasn't going to be that way. They said, I don't know what even they said.
They said that Toph would help her, but she wouldn't help her get all the way better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I was still worried, though.
I mean, everyone was worried. It wasn't obvious.
If there's an interview, Meredith knows what it says.
I also know what it says, though. Like, honestly, I think I've seen every interview with Mike and Brian.
I'm pretty sure Mary has two Dylan. I'm just going to take a wild guess.
Well, the Avatar ones, though. I don't know about that. Stuff. I don't know about during Avatar time.
Well, it's nice to see it in the show.
Yes, I don't trust what they say as well. Also, they just say they make stuff up sometimes, honestly. I don't even remember stuff from the Avatar Wiki interview they said that might apply now, whatever. So yeah, in conclusion, we have to continue this plot with Korra not being altogether better. It's good that it showed up in this episode, and it assuages a lot of my fears about this, but it does not completely solve the problem, and we can't just have Korra being better now. That being said, I didn't think this would necessarily happen, and I'm happy with the result here.
We need to talk about what state she's going to be in when she gets in Republic City next week.
So we kind of talked about this a little bit. Like, the question is she going to tell anyone what's going on? Yeah, Sam talked about this.
I would think Jenora is going to, like, I'm hoping we're going to get, like, a flying scene and Jenora and Korra talking.
Yeah, and I mean, Jenora, is she injured?
Like Jenora's going to, like, Jenora, I can't see Jenora not saying something. Especially since we had Jenora because
she brought that up as the line. I don't think Korra's injured, no.
Yeah. I mean, because, like, I think she was just weak, too, but...
Well, I'm sure she's a little, she's a little messed up.
There's precedent for the Avatar being weak after they come out of the Avatar state. Yeah. So I think that's all that was. So Mare has compiled a list of screenshots. How many are there? There's...
12.
15. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think there's 15 of shots left in from the trailer that we haven't seen. There's not that many, so that's cool.
Wait,
there's five rows, aren't there? Three columns.
No, I think there's four.
I have it open.
Oh no, there's five. I'm sorry. Five times three, 15.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So
we can math well very well.
So here's the deal. None of these are beyond episode 9, for sure, because they're not done color correcting episode 10, I'm pretty sure. I also don't think any of them are from episode 9, because the trailer came out 2 months ago, and they were probably not done color correcting episode 9 when the trailer came out. But it's possible. I also think there's a chance none of them are from episode 8 because they weren't done with that one either. Yeah. But that's two episodes from now, so there's a lot to get through in next episode, all of this, right?
At first, I originally thought, like, those shots in Republic City were going to be before, like, the shots of, like, whether or not Bendigo stays here. But, like, she looks like she has a ton of confidence in the Republic City shots. I mean, I don't know, like, she didn't look that way last episode, so I'm really confused as to which part comes first.
She looks frazzled when she enters the crystals in the basement, or it's the crystal room.
Yeah, it could just
room.
Be, like, what she's doing there, like, when she's in the Republic City scene, she's fighting some dude on a train, which is very much in her element, when she's...
Yeah.
Okay, let's go over...
alone, and we don't know what she's going up against.
Let's go over what we have. We're trying to get what's happening next episode. Again, we don't know the title, we haven't seen the clip as of this recording. Korra, and we know the next episode, Korra will wear her new sleeveless Water Tribe outfit because that was in the concept art. It said 407. Next episode's 407. Korra, in the trailer, we see Korra in this outfit with Mako and Asami in a car. We see Korra earthbending in the streets of Republic City. We see Korra metalbending on top of something. Probably
a train.
Is it? Can we tell it's a train for sure?
Looks like a train.
Probably a train. Considering we see Asami fighting one of the Kuvira supporters from episode 3, 2, 1, on top of a train.
I want to say it was 2.
It was one of them, yeah. And they were in multiple episodes.
Might have been one.
But we see Korra, Asami, Wu, and Mako inside. Presumably, this is... Everyone's been assuming it's inside a train because I said that at some point, and I think it's true. Inside probably the train, Korra.
It has Asami's colors.
Korra, Asami's colors. Korra, Asami, and Kuvira support are on top of. We see Jinora, looking fabulous, flying through Republic City, Viney area. We see three shots of Bolin. One of them, he's like fighting something. He's a rope around? No, that's his clothes. We see a couple mecha tanks fighting still, which we probably haven't seen yet. We see Korra and Mako outside of this thing, which we talked about. We see Korra and Mako inside of this Spirit Vine DE village, and we see three shots of Korra inside the crystal place, which we've speculated is in a basement. And then, the most interesting of all, we see Korra in her new outfit in the spirit world with like one of those space travel-y shots that they do in the spirit world.
Maybe she goes into the spirit world.
Yes. I conclude, considering we see the core in the spirit world, that she will go into the spirit world. Okay. So, how do we accomplish all this in probably two episodes at most because of the details
we're
going to
be in Republic City for like
I think minutes. The vines are going to come into a major play because we see Jinora. Like, the vines have always looked excessive, but I think especially in the shot of Jinora flying, they look super excessive. And the shot of Mako and Korra walking into the room, they look excessive.
Yeah,
so
Jinora and the shot of Mako, yeah, those are it's probably like the abandoned part of Republic City from the vines, yeah.
And it would make sense that they're fighting Kuvira supporters around the vines because they're probably trying to get vines to send to Kuvira.
A side note, it's possible that episodes 9, what are we? This next one will be 7 and 8, I've said it could be. It's possible episode 9, maybe 10 could be in the trailer for some reason if they were super far ahead of color correction on some episodes but not others. That seems unlikely, but it's possible.
They could have color corrected these scenes just to be in the trailer.
Just to be in the trailer, yeah, they could have worked on them ahead of time, that's true.
See, like, we're gonna put this in the trailer, make it look nice.
That being said, considering Mir is still working on episode 12, it seemed like they really have episode 10 done 2 months ago? I don't know. It's possible. If they work on them super sequentially, which they do. But, so, I don't know. I'm skeptical. I hope they're only from the next one or two episodes, because then we'll get no information going into the end. What are people's thoughts about so here's where we are in the story. The Fab Four plus Milo are on Pepper riding out of Zaufu. Korra, Opal, Jinora, Iki, and Milo. So those are the five people outside. We have Sue, Batar, Juan in custody in Zaufu.
And the twins,
because they're in
the entire
that
family
container.
except for Opal.
Batar too. Batar Jr.
Well, Batar is no longer a member.
He's the one locking them up. And
he's Percy Weasley. No one cares about him.
Yeah, but Percy like redeems himself. So
well, yeah, he hasn't done that yet.
So Harry Potter spoilers. I'm sorry. And
spoiler alert: Harry Potter is a wizard.
You're a wizard. Yeah.
The wizard dies.
And what was that? No, nothing. We didn't hear anything. Okay. And what else? And Kuvira, most importantly, Kuvira's in Zaufu right now.
Yes.
And not in Republic City, which is where we assume she'll head next. And Bolin and Varric are on the run.
How this is going to play out. Like, what's the end goal? Like, they're going to go up against Kuvira.
They already went up against Kuvira. I don't know. What is that?
She's going to try to take over Republic City.
Certainly, that seems like where we're going.
Well, and I think does Kuvira want to take over Republic City? Like, do we know
her
that?
We don't know
it for sure. It was on the map, but it was not it was not.
And she's only been talking about Zaufu.
She has not mentioned Republic City. But there is foreshadowing based on what the Queen said last season.
Yes.
So we assume it's going to happen. Yeah. After that, I don't know. What's the end game here? Kuvira has a super weapon. It's just a battle. Kuvira taking over the Earth King. We're going to go somewhere more deep than this. This is kind of a stereotypical plot. Like, we're going to go somewhere. I don't know where, though. We don't know the info.
I don't know
where
we're going to go.
We're going to Republic City, which I'm not thrilled about. not the biggest fan of that place.
I don't really care about Republic City. I'm just excited about everybody reuniting.
Yeah. Honestly,
like I mentioned before, we're going to have a plot shift at some point, and this is kind of like the beginnings of it, but the big, like, whoa moment hasn't really happened yet.
Yep.
Well, I think, okay, so like, no one knows about the weapon, right? Except Bolin and Varric.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah.
No, and of course, you know, the people who made the weapon. But so my thing is, like, I feel like there's going to have to be a demonstration if Bolin and Varric don't get to the city. Like, that to me, that's going to be the turning point where there is a demonstration of this weapon, and then everyone's like, wait a minute, we got to stop this. Yeah. Varric can destroy the world.
I think somebody's going to try to capture Wu at some point too.
Yeah, we did see that. Well, she's probably going to try and assassinate him.
Seems like it's possible that the plot of next episode is Kuvira's supporters try to kidnap Wu, which is pretty boring. But
which, and there's a chance that Kuvira's
it's not
going to
be boring.
This
is going to be Koromanko and Asami, and it's going to be beautiful.
And it's
like
be...
I could watch them like stare at walls.
Also, we get more Wuko next episode, so that's
yes,
a thing.
Wuko.
Sakura.
And I mean, maybe. Maybe that we don't know if we do. It's possible Mako and Korra's parts are before the group shots, but one would presume they're after, right?
Yeah, like, I would presume they're the episode after.
Yeah, so that could be next. That could be the episode after next episode, but I'm not sure. What else did I?
I'm excited to see Tenzin again. Is that weird?
No, I mean, you like
I'm
him,
excited.
So
I'm excited. Tenzin reunion.
I'm not. Not for.
And Naga. I need the Naga reunion right now.
Yeah. Oh. So. Oh. Okay. Okay. Two things we know. So one, our friend Will Ruzica posted this dumb. Someone asked him on Tumblr, can you give us three things that might happen on Korra in the future, but only one of them is true? So he posted three things, and one of them was Korra has a reunion, but just with Naga, and it's emotional. Two of the other things seemed not true, so it seemed like that one was it, but then he deleted it. So that's more evidence that that
what
is true.
What if Naga just dies?
No.
Shut up!
It said she had a play date with Naga.
Yeah, it said she'd have played it or whatever. Yeah, what if Bearpaw? So, also...
no.
Also, oh yeah, the last thing we...
Officially plugging this.
That's the Dongfeng recommended fic, except don't go there if you're under 18. The other thing I wanted to... The other thing that we know is going to happen in the season is that it seems like... what is even her name? Azumi will talk... Fire Lord Azumi will talk in episode 9.
Woo!
Or we'll see her. We'll meet her. She'll talk.
Is she
converse.
Gonna? Is she gonna? Be
Are they gonna go to the Fire Nation?
Let's go as well.
One would assume
Korra could go to the Fire Nation.
One would assume. Yeah, they're gonna go all the way to the Fire Nation. One would assume they're not going because
it's
Fire Nation,
so far.
But it is really.
LOL.
From where
the
they
Fire
are.
Nation's turn to keep the Earth Kingdom from taking over the world.
Yeah. LOL. No, but seriously, like if you think about it, who's in position to oppose Kuvira right now? There's three major players. There is one of them was Sue, not anymore.
Yep.
President Raiko.
He's not going to do anything because he's President Raiko.
Fire Lord Azumi has the Fire Nation forces, and lastly, General Iroh has the United Forces army. So those are the major players in the world. The only people in the world really that have any means to oppose. Oh, and Desna and Eska. So the three major.
Desna and Eska are not going to do anything. Like,
so really, the three people with armies who have any armies to stop Kuvira are Desna and Eska, Fire Lord Izumi, and General Iroh. So that's an interesting combination of four people.
And Desna and Eska are in Republic City. We saw them.
Yeah, they're probably gone by now, but they could come back with the Northern.
I don't know.
We don't know if they left. They could still be there. They could just
maybe
be hanging out.
Well,
maybe
Sue left. We know Sue Desna left. So. So what?
But Desna and Eska are not Sue.
I said Desna really. Maybe Desna really liked that bathtub. We don't know.
They just want to stay in that room. Yeah.
What else do they have to do, honestly?
Go govern the Northern Water Tribe.
No, like they're actually no.
We didn't see anyone else governing.
Doesn't Eska sit around making legislation?
Actually,
yes, I think Eska does. I think Desna doesn't do anything. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think they do much of anything.
We saw them in the palace, and there was no one who was equal.
They were sitting on throne chairs.
There was no one who was equal to them there. We didn't see any
Wukong
type character.
Wuko sat in a throne chair and a.
Did you say Wuko?
Well, yes,
I want
to stand there.
Up and Mako on the throne now.
Okay, that's our analysis of what's happening next. Okay, we correctly identified what the title of this episode would be, The Battle of Zhaofu. What is the title of next episode? It starts with the. I don't know if it
the
does.
The reunion.
The reunion.
The reunion.
No,
yes.
It's not going
to
be.
The return to Republic City.
The return to the Republic City.
Yes, the train.
The train. Okay, it actually could be the train. But they don't do titles like the train anymore. That's like the headband. They
it's
used to do those
be
all the
reunion.
Time. And
I would say the return.
The return. It could be the return.
The return of Avatar Korra.
Yeah,
no,
probably.
No. They won't have Avatar Korra in the title yet.
The return to a public city. The return to the past.
The returned. No.
The return.
The zombie movie.
The Wuko.
The Wuko, I like that. It works.
The oh look, it's Mako. We haven't seen him in three episodes.
Oh my gosh, I'm dying. I miss him.
Can we see Lin doing something? I want Lin to be like, my sister's been kidnapped. I'm gonna go destroy everyone.
I want Lin and Mako to get together and think about Bolin and Sue being gone, and I just want them to cry.
I'm just, yeah.
Can they have sibling feels? That would be nice.
Please.
Like,
also, Mako where Toph, her and Toph, she, like, does get your stuff together.
Like, Toph is, everything Mako.
I'm not convinced Toph is gonna be in
Toph
the season
needs
again.
To leave the swamp or I will never be happy.
She's going to leave the swamp.
I'm not convinced.
Like, it's obvious.
I don't think it's obvious. I think I think they could just end her there. Like,
she has to leave.
But Mike and Brian said that it would take something very important for
Mike
her to
said, someone asked Mike, how could Toph leave the swamp? Brian said it would take something
that doesn't
very
mean,
important.
Yeah, that doesn't
mean,
something
she is
going to
leave.
Yeah,
also
in prison, that's important.
Also, that...
Lynn lost her bending and Toph's just chilling. Okay?
That's
like,
true.
I didn't really know.
Also,
well, at least her daughter was safe, though. Like,
that interview
really,
was...
Really, she was released. Yeah, she was released.
They were so
really
trolly
safe.
In that interview. Mike would totally
they
hint at Toph coming
so
back.
Hard.
And yeah, anyway. All I know is that
leave and beat the crap out of everyone.
Seems like
oh,
we'll
and there
see.
There was also a tweet last year, and it said like Jason Isaacs, Janora.
Yeah. Jason Isaacs, Kiernan Shipka. Who else was there?
Sue.
I think.
And Juan or
and
whatever.
And Hish. Yeah, I think she was there too. Anyway, so who's Jason Isaacs going to be? It's obviously Zhao. It's obviously just Zhao. He's broken out of the. I mean, the portals are open. Zhao now comes out of the fog, and he goes through the portals, and now he's just a person again.
Oh my tries gosh. To kill the sun.
That's like, isn't that the plot of? Isn't that the plot of the video game? Isn't that just the plot
yes,
of?
Yes, that is the plot of. The video
so why
game.
Doesn't Zhao
right,
come
it.
Back?
That like, is literally the plot of the video game.
So Zhao's back. Okay, you heard it here first. It's been confirmed by me that Zhao's back. Okay, let's end the podcast on. I've been your main host Dylan. Co-hosts have been Mare, Britt, and Delaney. Okay, it's loaded. Now I can actually read this. Technocrackers, AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Their music credits. The
you
Yoshida
don't
Brothers,
have this memorized.
Jeremy
I
Zuckerman,
memorized.
Luke Tripp. No. Colloquium Banner by Kevin, Dom Fingsel by Jake. Special contributor, Gareth contributors, Sierra, Nick, Devin and Lexi, Colin, Gretchen, Britt, Nathan, Jamie.
I have your intro memorized.
Well, yeah, I have that in. I have
Dylan
that
still has to look at it, but I can pretty
no,
sure.
No, I have the intro. Forward. G, Millionaire, CR, Miss, Nick, and I, Rudy, and Tabuti, Coin, Fetch, and Opal, Iroh, Jainora.
Jainora.
Yes, he gave himself that nickname. If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating from the Spirit World. All donations go directly to supporting our podcast. You can donate by going to dongfeng.net/podcast and clicking donate at the top. Also on dongbufeng.net/podcast, you can find our bios and art by Teresa. You can email us at dylan@dongbufeng.net. Our Tumblr is @dongbufeng, one word, DONGBUFENG. You have to be following it. There's no excuse.
Why don't I have a bio?
No excuse to, well, because you weren't on the main cast until now. Maybe you can get a bio now, yeah. And maybe you can get awesome art by Teresa, too. That'd be yes. Cool. What bender would you be?
I think we had this discussion.
Yeah, we had this discussion. That's
no,
true.
I thought we told you fire.
I don't know. We discussed this. At dongbufeng. As our Twitter, but yeah, seriously, follow the DF Tumblr. Like, just do it. If you want to give me feedback on this podcast, dongbufeng.net/forums, post in there. You can give us a review on iTunes, search Korra or From the Spirit World or Legend of Korra or anything. We're like the first one. And you can send me an ask on Tumblr if you want my, I'll answer whatever, probably. I did not answer some
you
asks
You didn't
recently.
Answer any of my spam ones that I sent you.
Yeah, well, so
I
I've been...
an anonymous one last week and you never answered it.
Well, like what, which ones didn't... I thought I only didn't answer rude ones, so maybe you guys were rude to me, so I don't know.
Not rude.
I wasn't rude.
Rude.
I don't know.
But... I asked you about Julie.
I don't
remember.
Like,
that might have been the one where we
how
were
much
like,
you like
talk
Taco, and you didn't answer.
I don't remember. Okay, anyway. it's dylanftsw.tumblr.com. These guys' Tumblrs are linked to from the Dongbufeng Tumblr post about the podcast. Follow them. And send, you can send us a voicemail on dongbufeng.net/podcast. Click the annoying thing that pops up on the right. Keep it to 30 seconds if you want us to play it on the show. And thumbs up. Next week, we'll be back discussing episode 7, ? The return of the Zhao. You heard it here first.
The return of the Zhao.
Okay.
It's going to be called The Return.
What are we going to end on? There's some obvious contenders here.
Dr. Science
is, I think,
you're not even relevant.
Dismantle the domes.
Hush.
I like... Mr. Dr. Science.
Yeah,
Dr. Science is a good one. Also, # begin dismantling the domes is another good one, too. Which has 2 retweets and 8 favorites. Oh, man, you should go favorite
this
at Dabu
Fangs.
This is
the most that Dylan's ever had.
#
Ow.
Our Twitter, to be fair, our Twitter is not very popular. But we've had some good ones. Some good ones recently. But yeah, you should follow
we
our Twitter.
We all love you, Dylan, don't worry. You're very important.
Thank you, Britt. That didn't sound sarcastic at all.
Not at all.
So we can end on Dr. Science?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I think we're under 2 hours, so good job, guys.
By 5 minutes. We got 5 minutes.
Thanks for listening. Hours. Send me stuff.
Dal, you've already said it. Okay, you can't push us over 2 hours now. One.
We're not going to go over 2 hours. Don't worry.
Two.
You don't get to count. I get to do the counting. Okay. So. What was that? I honestly didn't hear. What was the line? Was it offensive? Do I have to edit it?
Continue.
Do I have to edit it?
No, you don't have to edit. You don't have to
edit.
Well,
I'm going
to
make a note to go
back. I didn't say any curse.
Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3, Dr. Science.
Dr. Science.
Hashtag begin dismantling the domes.
Oh my god, now I want someone to make, like, Bill Nye the Science Guy, but with Batar.
And then he's just really
Dr.
dumb.
Science.
Yeah.
And he's like the lame version of
lame Bill Nye.
Everybody's cut this off already.
Hashtag lame Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yes.
There you go. Tweet that
out. Does
anyone
even listen all the way to the end?
No. Anyway, okay, I'm just cutting it off now. Bye.